This is a Quality News Network. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and the U.S. ambassador issued a joint statement today. In it, al-Maliki reaffirmed Iraq's commitment to a strong relationship with the U.S. Earlier this week, he said the U.S. had no right to impose timetables on his country, but today he said that, quote, issues must be resolved within timelines. The U.S. military reported today that one more U.S. soldier has died from wounds suffered yesterday, bringing the death toll so far this month to 97. In New Hampshire, Republican Senator John McCain said that the U.S. should send 20,000 more troops to Iraq. He also reiterated that he opposes a...
It was a bloody day in Iraq. 8 U.S. military deaths today, 11 so far this month. The tortured bodies of another 83 Iraqis have been found dumped throughout Baghdad in the past 2 days. The U.N. says as many as 70,000 Iraqis flee to neighboring countries every month, 3.4 million since the U.S. invasion. The U.N. report released today warns there is not enough money available to provide the refugees assistance. In Baghdad, the verdict in the first Saddam Hussein war crimes trial is expected Sunday. In preparation for possible violence, Iraq's defense minister canceled all soldiers' leaves. And the New York Times reports today the U.S. government agency, which has revealed corruption and mismanagement of U.S. reconstruction efforts in Iraq, is being shut down by the Bush administration. The Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction was quietly removed from this year's military budget at the last minute. In Fort Bragg, Georgia, a U.S. Army National Guard soldier went to court today, charged with murdering 2 superior officers in Iraq last year. It is the first flagging incident of its kind during the Iraq War. British citizens consider George Bush a bigger threat to world peace than North Korea's Kim Jong-il. That's according to a report released today by London's Guardian. 69% of those polled think U.S. foreign policy has made the world less safe. In the Gaza Strip, Israeli troops killed 14 Palestinians today. 2 women were killed and 10 wounded when they attempted to act as human shields between Palestinian gunmen and Israeli soldiers. In California, nearly 2,300 prison inmates may soon be moved to other states to relieve California's overcrowded prisons. The inmates will be moved to privately run prisons in Arizona, Indiana, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. In Texas, live images from 8 cameras stationed along the Texas-Mexico border are now being broadcast on the web by the state's Department of Homeland Security. Officials are asking viewers to call in if they think they see immigrants sneaking over the border. In Southern California, funerals began today for the 5 firefighters killed in the Esperanza wildfire. Yesterday, a 36-year-old auto mechanic was charged with murder and arson in connection with the blaze. According to the FAA, more than half of the nation's airports have at least some runways that are dangerously short. A recent report from the safety agency says runways must be lengthened at 325 U.S. airports, including those in L.A., Chicago, and Atlanta. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Today, in a meeting of the Montreal Protocol, the U.S. was given permission to use 7,100 tons of insecticide methyl bromide to fumigate crops like strawberries and tomatoes. The protocol is meeting in New Delhi. The international group is charged with regulating damage to the Earth's ozone layer. In the Netherlands, more than 100 horses marooned Tuesday when floodwaters breached a dike were finally rescued today. 20 had already drowned. 3 women rode horses out into the 7-foot waters and guided the herd to shore. In Iowa, district court has ordered Bill Gates and Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer to appear later this month in a class action suit charging the computer company with anti-competitive practices. The suit asks $450 million for Iowans who have purchased Microsoft software since 1994. Biochemical company Vaxgen today announced another delay in its billion-dollar federal contract to produce 25 million doses of anthrax vaccine. The FDA says it fears the vaccine may lose its potency too quickly to be effective. As expected, Continental American and Delta Airlines have announced airline increases by $10 per round trip. It's the 22nd fare hike by U.S. Airlines in the past 2 years. Light sweet crude is $59.15 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 32 points at 11,986. The Nasdaq was down 3 at 2330. The S&P 500 was down.
Hello, I'm Mary Lou Retton.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. God, I feel like that amateur that comes up to the microphone. This thing's on, and it is on by virtue of a lot of skull sweat and hard work.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peanut Gallery. Yes, thank you, Peter. Thank you, Peter Godbold. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, but thank you. Thank you for all the help, because it seemed a little like destiny. There was no way under the sun that this day was going to pass without this mic getting turned on. Now, just to give you, just a little quick update, just so you'll know kind of where we've been. We have a little ritual we go through prior to each broadcast day of sort of checking all the switches and bells and whistles and so forth to make sure everything works. And then we shut down the main computer and restart it to get a nice clean slate on which to work. And I did that Wednesday morning, Eastern Time. And I went down, I pushed a little power button, a little light went blink, and then nothing happened. And I pushed it again, nothing happened, and nothing, and nothing, and nothing, and nothing, and nothing. At which point, I ran to the chat room, sent a message to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, and, "Help me!" So, it's been... just to let you know, with Peter's help, I have actually learned how to build a computer. That's where I've been. Man, I have been to the Microsoft Mountain and looked back on all of Bill's creation. I mean, almost, I admit, I took 3 hours off. For 3 hours last night, I watched my beloved West Virginia Mountaineers flush their national title hopes down the toilet. Now, this is the sour grapes part of the program. I really can't blame them for what happened, because everything came apart in the third quarter. Just bear with me. It's almost like, Louisville was being run by people from Louisville's stadium facilities were being run by people from Diebold or something. Because in the third quarter, now bear in mind, this game has been had been highly touted from July to the present. And they were calling it the blackout in November. You know, because Louisville's colors are red and black. Okay. They were calling it the blackout in November. Well, the third quarter starts, and all of a sudden the ESPN broadcast team says, you know what? About half the lights have gone out, and it's really dark. So playing in near twilight conditions, my beloved Mountaineers blew it. So I was gone for 3 hours. But apart from that, I was a computer working on kind of guy. And you know, I'm proud of it. I am incredibly proud of the effort that was put out in the last 2.5 days. You name me one other talk show network where the host would actually get his hands dirty getting the computer system back up and running. Where there would be technical support from as far away as Tallahassee, Florida, and Sydney, Australia. It's pretty, I'm pretty impressed. Not so much with myself, but with the effort that was put forth. Yeah, I mean, we had to do it this way because that's what we are. We're not a multi-million dollar corporation presently in bankruptcy. All we are is a group of committed individuals absolutely determined to bring you facts and bring you truth. And it's what we try to do each and every day. And my sincerest apologies go out to people like Dr. Bill and Joe Vecchio and Mark Levine, John Fox, because we didn't get their programs up one Wednesday and Thursday and today. But we are back, and we will be back Monday, and we will be back Tuesday. And I hope that Tuesday especially, I haven't worked this out with the other hosts yet. I hope they will join us. I'd like to see us do a sort of round-robin kind of affair Tuesday where everybody's involved in everybody's programming, and especially you guys are as involved as you have ever, ever been. You know, if you hear something about sleazy election practices, let us know. This is the new media. I believe we will also be affiliated. We'll be cutting into the broadcast coverage being provided by, among other people, our good friend Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. So it should be fun. It should be a great deal of fun. And a lot of it turns on what you do, of course, as well. Now it's Friday. We've got 2 days of pent-up frustrations, pent-up irritation, pent-up republican filth that we need to deal with. So, from my perspective, I mean, there are stories out there to cover, no doubt about it. But from my perspective, light up the phones. Light them up. 877-443-2366. Because now is, well, like I said, you don't want to bottle this stuff up over the weekend. Let's have a genuine, old-fashioned front porch blab fest tonight. What do you think? I like the idea. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Jim joins us from an undisclosed location. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you. How are you tonight?
A little frazzled, but I'll be better.
Well, those keys will do it for you, will they not?
I've seen things inside computers that I never imagined I would ever see, Jim.
Oh, I have no doubt, but I just had to replace my whole system. I know what you're going through. But I guess Kerry's October surprise has now disappeared from the radar screen, and now the Republicans have their own November nightmare with Pastor Ted.
Pastor Ted, yes.
Mm-hmm. Ted, apparently, when he gets on his knees, it isn't always to pray.
Well, you know, that's well said. I was thinking more in terms of, you know, a little meth and gay prostitution always will bring you closer to God.
Well, you know, now here's one thing. Now, when Bill Clinton lied and told that I did not have sex with that woman, now this guy's saying that he had never been involved in a gay relationship and he has seen the same man every month for the past 3 years. I think we're even, you know. So they could take the standards that they applied to Bill Clinton and they could put them on this guy.
Exactly. You know, and of course, Pastor Ted came out and said, "Well, I did buy some meth once. I'd never tried it before, and I took it home and didn't use it."
Right.
For 3 years.
Right. Sure he did.
He was witnessing, Jim. Let's not be so hard on the man. He was a witnessing.
Oh, I'm not being hard on him. I mean, you know, I'll guarantee you. And then...
We should probably not use the word hard in this conversation.
Well, true.
You still there? Oh, no. We lost Jim. Oh, it's going to... No, this is a difficult story to do without wandering through through minefields of irony, at the very least. Sorry we lost you, Jim.
I'm sorry. Rupert stepped on the telephone.
Tell Rupert not to do that anymore.
But I'll tell you, I'm so, let's see here. You know, Pastor Ted and his messaging habit, and he just... like, I guess, well, you know, he took a puff, but he didn't inhale, right?
Yeah, and he took a snort, but it didn't get past his sinuses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just funny how about karma and how chickens can come home to roost.
Well, I've got this theory, Jim, and you may disagree, but I've just about come to the conclusion that the evangelical movement has more gay folk in it than all the bathhouses in the United States combined.
You're probably right.
I mean, have you ever seen this guy?
Yeah, I've seen him. I saw him on TV.
And of course, he was in the film Jesus Camp. And now he came out and complained about
that horror.
Oh yeah. I mean, this guy is the pastor of that New Life megachurch out in Colorado, and he's also president of the American Evangelical Association with memberships somewhere around 30 million.
And as Brian Williams said last night, he has special assets to the White House.
Oh, well, no, he is openly referred to, Jim, as the president's, the president's spiritual consigliere.
Is that so?
Yeah, he has prayer calls with the president once a week, this article at Pensito Review remarked.
You know, I would love to just overhear one of their conversations. I'm sure they're talking about Jesus. I'm sure it's just purely spiritual.
Oh, and I'm sure Pastor Ted hollers, "Oh, God," once in a while, too. But, you know, I'm thinking it's not liturgical.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like some people call on God on the golf course a lot more than they do in church, except he's doing it in a different part of the, he's doing it, I guess, behind closed doors or whatever. But, you know, it's really funny how this guy cavorted with this fitness specialist for 3 years and then would be on television trying to decry the horrors of allowing gay people to have even civil unions and things of that nature. And his own presence in a public medium, this guy saw it and said, well, we've been cavorting and tricking for 3 years, and now it's trick or treat for you.
Yeah, because
he outed him.
The hooker never knew who this guy was, Jim.
Yeah, he used the name Art.
Which makes me wonder if maybe Pastor Ted's name is Arthur Theodore Haggard or Theodore Arthur Haggard or something along those lines.
I don't know, but his official thing is that he has gone for spiritual guidance.
Yeah, I'll bet you he has. Yeah, I mean, there's tape out there now, apparently, of, I mean, the
guy. Yeah, this guy has him on an answering machine.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, you can do the whole Mission Impossible thing and match up the voice prints. And, yeah, oh, that's Pastor Ted calling saying I need $200 worth of meth.
Well, and not only that, I'm sure they probably discussed other things, too. And I'm not going to even go into what they probably are. I'm sure you probably can understand what I'm alluding to.
Let's put it this way. It probably has some similarities with the IMs that Mark Foley sent.
I would think so. And, you know, here's the thing. These Christian evangelicals, now, I do not, for one, and, you know, I have never been one to make fun of them or whatever, but I hope that these people will have enough sense to realize that the people who are making fun of them and who are really calling them just probably every name in the book and laughing at them behind their back, a lot more than the liberals would ever do that, are their so-called conservative Republican God-fearing friends who are anything but.
Well, now we begin to understand why the White House, as has been reported recently in that newly published book, now we understand why that the right, you know, the White House and the Rovians and so forth laugh and snicker up their sleeves every time these guys go. They know. They've probably known for years what Haggard was doing.
Well, of course they did. I mean, these people have ways of keeping tabs on people, and they tap people's phones and. And they probably have told Pastor Ted, well, Pastor Ted, we understand that you have certain tricks of character, and we need for you to play ball with us. And as long as you play ball with us, we'll just keep it all on the QT.
You know, that's a very, very interesting point, Jim, because I'm trying to remember. I think the National Evangelical Association or National Association of Evangelicals or whatever, some group of them came out and took a position on global warming contrary to the administration.
Exactly. They had a documentary on television about it, and this man had gone to Germany, one of the people who is one of their key players went to a seminar in Oxford, England, and he realized that, you know, their position on global warming and they should just let the earth just go to hell, literally, was not in keeping with the commandments of the Bible, that man was placed in charge of this earth, and the stewardship they were showing was not good. And this caused this guy a lot of grief. But this fella, who changed his mind on global warming, and said there is something to it, he's a pretty tough cookie.
Yeah.
And, you know, things are beginning to look a little better, and I'm just guardedly optimistic.
Well, guardedly optimistic is a good way to be, Jim, because in one of these stories about Haggard, there's a very interesting there's a very interesting quote here from one of his parishioners. Who said that, well, members of Haggard's 14,000-member megachurch were stunned. Can you imagine if everybody just puts a dollar in the plate once a week? Just a buck. But
oh,
anyway.
Yeah. And upwards of a dollar in his poor box, I'm sure.
And Brian Bowles is a New Life Church member for some 17 years, and he said, it's political right before the elections. And E.J. Cox, 25 years old, said the claims are ridiculous. People are always saying stuff about Pastor Ted. You just sort of blow it off. He's just like anyone else in the public eye.
He used those words.
Mm-hmm.
That's appropriate.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I figured you'd pick up on that.
Well, you know, there's some people who just, and they're probably in it up to their necks, too. And
well, you know, that's the thing. These
you know, if Pastor Ted falls, the wave that would create would engulf several of them, if you know what I mean.
Well, sure, and that's the nature of these mega churches. These things are purely and simply cults of personality, Jim.
And they're money makers. That's all they're there for.
Yeah.
And there's no spirituality genuine. Whatever spirituality they try to project is purely counterfeit. It's their thoughts.
There's more spirituality on this program in 1 hour than there is in every mega church in these United States rolled together.
Well, I think you may be right. And I'll tell you, this is something that they're not, you know, I just hope that these people begin to realize how they have been used and how they've been laughed at behind their backs and made fun of by people like Karl Rove and all the Bush's confidants. And they will know this for what the people they are. And, you know, that as far as Democrats are concerned, I mean, by and large, Democrats are not people who are anti-religious or atheist and things like that. You have certain segment of the Democratic Party that is, naturally, but you have a lot of Christian Democrats.
Well, and the other thing, but the other thing I think that defines Democrats far more than it defines Republicans is the fact that we take seriously the teachings of our mamas and our daddies and grandmas and grandpas when they taught us to mind our own business. You know, I remember my own mother saying to me, you know, your life is gonna have enough in it.
Well, you know, what's that old Hank Williams song? Mind your own business.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know those lyrics are very, very appropriate. And I'll never forget the first time I heard that song. And you know, there it is, and there you have it. But these Republicans, they don't like to do that. I mean, they can be somewhat of busybodies, can they not?
Well, I mean, look at them. They want to decide who can get married. They want to decide how people can have sex, how they can't have sex. Sure.
I mean, what are they going to do with these constitutional amendments, for example? I mean, are you going to put a constitutional amendment on speed limits?
Ultimately, I think they anything. Right.
I mean, they put a constitutional amendment on everything they possibly could. You know, particularly anything that's enclosed in the law in a parenthetical element, they would try to put a constitutional amendment on anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And yet, I remember, you know, and the one recent constitutional amendment that should have passed and didn't, they came out in full force against. You remember the Equal Rights Amendment?
Oh yeah.
Well, you know, who led the charge against that? Evangelicals.
Yeah, they don't want women in the church and stuff like that. They don't want women to have any position of responsibility in the church, and I don't understand that at all. I mean, I have never seen where women were supposed to take a second seat to men in the church.
Well, it says there in 32nd Flip-Floppians or something that women are to be silent in church. So I guess that means, you know, to an evangelical that the only way a woman could be a priest was if she was a priest who was also a mime.
Or new sign language.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Well, exactly. Anyway, I think it's going to be an interesting couple of days to see how they're going to spin this one out. But let's face it, you know, if this guy has the goods that he says he has and his pastor Ted resigned, you know, if I were accused of something like that and I were innocent, it's like Don Imus said this morning. And, of course, I'm not using Don Imus as any example because God knows sometimes I think he's just absolutely nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he said, and I agree with him, I would scream from the highest housetop, and I'd scream so loud you could hear me on the moon. And not resign for spiritual guidance.
Yeah, if you're not guilty.
But he's as guilty as sin.
Sure
absolutely.
He is. Absolutely, you're
and
right.
These other people, his confederates who are defending him, Bob, I'll guarantee you, they probably have something in their closet, too. And they realized that this thing, their cover would begin to run like an old fox.
Well, you remember, what was it, a year or so ago when the vice president of the Southern Baptist Convention or some such got busted for soliciting gay hookers in his Mercedes-Benz in Oklahoma City?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, you do. We talked about it on the air.
I don't remember it. I'm sorry. My mind.
That's okay. But,
my
you know,
mind's gone.
It's understandable, Jim, because there's one of these a week. I mean, these people, they have created by their own actions and by their own hypocrisies, they have created a haven for pedophilia, for illicit sexual practices. The evangelical movement's one big closet.
But, you know, this is not confined to evangelicals. Now, here's something else, and this is a slight departure here. Now, the Roman Catholic Church, and I hate to see this happen, they have apparently a group of psychiatrists and psychologists who work with the Vatican, okay? And they've just published a pamphlet saying that the American position or the psychiatric position that homosexuality is not a mental disease is. Have you seen this?
No.
Yeah, they have a pamphlet out now saying, in other words, they're going back to pre-Kinsey, and they're going back saying that homosexuality is a mental illness.
Oh, God.
They have a pamphlet that's been published. And, you know, I don't understand why in the world with homosexuality and the practices among certain, and the priests and the, with children, why they just can't keep, have sense enough to keep their mouth shut about something like that. But they have come out now saying that it is an illness, and that the American Psychiatric Association or the Psychiatric Association throughout the world is wrong in its position toward homosexuals.
Well, you know, I love the way these people operate. You've got scientific evidence. You've got a great weight of scientific evidence, and these people. But you know, this is what happens when you inject that dirty little word belief into science. You know, science is about what we can know. Science is about what we can test, what we can measure, what we can find out and call fact.
Yeah, I understand.
But they say, well, you know, the best example, the hardcore mathematics science that went into this determination that 600,000 Iraqis are dead. And some reporter, I remember, asked George Bush about it, and he said, yeah, I don't find it credible. Well, you know,
I don't find it credible.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting, of course, to note that the root of the word credible and credibility is the Latin word credo credere, which is, of course, to believe. So, you know, what an admission that was on his part. He couldn't refute the facts, so all he could say was he didn't believe it. In other words, and that's the way these people operate. Screw the intellect. Never mind the mind. We'll just believe what we want to believe, and if you believe hard enough, Tinkerbell won't die.
Well, I've got news for them. That just ain't so. Be sure your sins will find you out. And, you know, when Lancet came out with the publication, that 600,000 of those people had died since that invasion. And, of course, we've just lost 100 of our own men in October, 4 yesterday or today. And also, 56 people were found beheaded in Baghdad in the past 24 hours. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
And, you know, that shows you how much law and order is over there and how wonderful our presence is and what we've done to that country. You know, I just, the whole thing is just beginning to fall apart. And it's going to turn into a very, very nasty situation for us. It already is nasty, and it's going to turn into a civil war, and we are going to be outmaneuvered, and our government is going to be discredited even more than it has been already. And how it can be any more than it has been, I don't know, but I guarantee you, just when you think that the worst thing has happened, something else will happen. It's even worse than that.
Yeah, exactly.
And anyway, I'm going to take up a little of your time, and I need to get off the air and let you run your program. But I thought I would just share, you know, my feelings about Pastor Ted and his peccadilloes, and we'll just see what happens. And let's just hope for a positive influence for the Democrats on the 7th of November.
I'm keeping everything I can cross,
Jim.
We need
15 in the House and 6 in the Senate, right?
Right. And, you know, maybe all we need is for Makaka Allen to tackle one more decent human being.
Well, I think that Virginians are ready to have him take a walk. And, you know, this guy's his opponent's fiction books, well, they've gone through some of the stuff that man's gone through. I don't think a lot of it is fiction.
No.
And on that note, I will bid adieu, and y'all have a good evening.
All right.
Stay warm.
Thanks, Jim. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. You too. And let's keep it rolling along. Yeah, can't talk. And let's hear from Steady out in California. Hey, Steady.
Hi, Bob. TGIF to the chat room and Agnes. How are you?
I'm doing, well, better now that we're back on the air.
Okay, yeah, we missed a little bit here, but I've been kind of buried, and I got a chance to go to a meeting this morning, and Scott Ritter was in town here in Los Angeles. sharing his new book, Target Iran. And the guy's dynamic. I'm sure many are familiar with Scott Ritter, but he is just, he's still on fire. And he was, just came back from Iran and was talking about the differences between Iran and Iraq. And then inside Iraq, the differences in the sects of Shia and sects of Sunni, the guy knows, you know, where the diplomatic things need to be worked out. And he talks about how our options have been, you know, we're dumbed down, and it's either you cut and run or you stay the course. And he broke that down, you know, just tore that apart. And I got a copy of his book. Scott, I think it's been out now for a couple months. It was there at Camp Democracy when we were there. But getting ready to run through the weekend and into Tuesday here. And I just wanted to share that Scott Ritter's on it, and the committee to elect Michael Stettler was there and got to meet him. It was a very proud moment for me.
Absolutely.
I sourced his, you know, his report in October 2002 when I wrote Gallagly about the pre-war intelligence and rubber stamp from Congress, and it's really that letter that I wrote 4 years ago that stands today, and the confidence in Mr. Ritter's report and intelligence, and why I'm doing what I'm doing with my writing campaign. So on that note, everybody can do, you know, what I'm doing, and I encourage you to stay on this. As soon as it's over, I'm going to be, you know, starting up for 2008. Who knows? But we'll take a couple deep breaths and move on.
Well, that's what you got to do. And the thing is, once the bug bites you, it's hard to get it out of your system, Steady.
And having the horn, you guys are like friends. To call in and talk and chat, and it's great. I feel I've got a network, and thank you all. TGIF.
Thanks, Steady. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And on to our good friend Albert in Wisconsin. Hey, Albert, welcome to the program. Thanks.
Good evening, Bob. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, don't ever thank me for taking a call again, okay? Thank you for calling. I'm a little frazzled, little haggard. No, I better not say haggard.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I just want to relate how I felt about it when I first heard it.
Okay.
You know, I heard this and I was like, you know, immediately, you know, my instinct was to go, you scumbag, you piece of crap, you hypocrite. But then, you know, I caught myself because, you know, I do like to believe that I can, you know, or I'd like to try to walk the walk, you know. I mean, I don't want people to judge me, and I shouldn't judge other people. You know what I'm saying?
No, I do.
You should give them the benefit of the doubt and so on and so forth. So then I watched the whole unedited film version, I mean the news interview with Haggard, and, you know, he did seem honest. He did seem sincere. And he did seem, you know, innocent. You know, and so I gave him that benefit of the doubt because, as I said, I don't want to be judging people like that. And I think it's too, you know, I mean, especially in this environment that we're in with the politics, it's, you know, I mean, seeing this Republican hypocrisy over and over and over again, it's so tempting just to sit there and see somebody like him. It's so easy to jump on it. And I didn't want to fall into that trap, you know what I mean? So I sat there and I gave him the benefit of the doubt, and then I wake up today, and all of a sudden he's admitting that he not only, you know, knows the guy that he didn't say no, he's buying meth from him.
And getting a massage. Don't forget the massage.
I haven't even started. I mean, what is this? Nobody goes off and tries meth. You know, on the recommendation of a friend. You know, this isn't a latte enema. Okay.
Jesus. No, it's not.
This is crystal methamphetamines, okay?
Yeah, somebody cooked it up in the bathtub with some crushed up Sudafed. Yeah.
Yeah, and it is a disgusting substance. Okay? And it's a hardcore substance, okay? Now you don't just sit there and jump off and hey, you know, oh, man, I'm so tired. Oh, you should try this pick-me-up, you know. I mean, come on. I mean, what is that? I mean,
no, that's when you go out and buy the bottle of Vivarin caffeine pills or no-dose or something, or the little, you know, the little pick-me-ups they sell at the convenience. Yeah, I know.
Now, Mr. Pure, I mean, yeah, Mr. Pure, you would think, would start out with maybe like some herbal tea. You know, maybe then he'd work himself up to instant coffee, then he would get to a French press coffee, and then espresso, and then maybe Vibrant, right? But he'd have, you know, he'd have stages to go through. He'd go...
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the thing. I'm trying to apply the way my mind works to what's going on with... I mean, you know, if a buddy of mine calls and says, hey, you know, they got this really good beer in over at the store, and it hasn't been here before, and you got to try a bottle of it, I'll think, you know, they'll split a six-pack with him or something, because what if I don't like it?
True.
But, I mean, there's a process involved there, Albert, yeah. That apparently just woke up one morning, and, you know, I think I'm going to try meth.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have a keg in my bathroom.
Yeah.
And in my kitchen. You know, and it is interesting, because we continue on. And this isn't, you know, we just started this whole little thing. You know, Ted, you know what Ted's middle name is?
Arthur?
Yeah.
How did I know? Arthur Ted Strick, yeah.
Ted Arthur.
Haggard.
Mm-hmm.
Or Arthur Ted, yeah, okay.
Art. Yeah, that would be his little gay pseudonym, wouldn't it?
Yeah, his
Art.
Handle.
Hi, this is Art. I'm calling for my massage. Make sure you have a 20 rock of meth for me. I mean, how much did he pay? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, according to the phone tapes, one Denver radio station has heard them and said that he says, "Hi, Mike. This is Art. I'd like to get $100 worth, or maybe $200 worth."
No, you know how much that is.
I mean, is that like a mountain of meth?
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, that's like, you know, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, put in my suitcase in the trunk kind of quantity. I mean, that's weeks and weeks. And now I don't do that crap. But, you know, I do know about the underworld a little bit, and I do know that much of that money worth, that's a lot.
That's enough to keep the congregation whacked for a while. I mean,
it's enough to keep
is that enough for communion for 14,000 new lifers?
Yeah, well, you would think. I mean, and you know, maybe it isn't a lot, because I told you, I don't really know. Maybe it isn't. Maybe, you know, you can go through that in an hour with Bush, because that's the other point of this. You know, Bush, he's Mr. Spiritual Advisor to Bush.
Yeah.
You remember them videos, and, you know, we don't really see them anymore, but when Bush was stressed out and he had to campaign all the time, man, that man's jaw was just like there was a motor in it. He was grinding that jaw and just...
Oh, yeah.
You know, and those are all... I mean, you know, Hitler... Yeah, I know.
Hitler
was called a carpet biter. Okay, because what Hitler used to do, and him and all the high-ranking Nazis, is they'd take a lot of meth, and they'd stay up for days and days and days, and eventually he'd, you know, you degrade into a raving... You know, these are all things we hear about Bush. I mean, these are things that you hear about, and people go, oh, well, it's not credible. You know, yeah, it's just a White House aide saying that, you know, the guy's flipping out, you know, cursing at people. It's just a goddamn piece of paper. Stop throwing it in my face.
Yeah.
What is that? You know,
that's the raving of a meth head. Sure.
Yeah. He's a carpet muncher. Not muncher, biter. You know, so.
Yeah, don't mix your metaphors out.
Yeah, I know. Well, speaking of meta, I mean, you know, I think personally, I think, you know, I mean, could Reverend Haggard be sitting there teaching Bush how to, you know, use the glass dick? And that's something that I do think that is definitely...
Well, you know, two words for you, okay? Jeff Gannon.
Exactly! Oh, that's exactly what I was thinking. You're reading my mind. You must be on the meth. You know, I can't... who forgot about Jeff Gannon's late-night visits? What is this? This guy comes to the White House 20, 50, 100 times with a false name. He gets a press pass every day. And then he visits the White House after hours?
Don't forget hotmilitarystuds.com.
8-plus inches, uncut, baby. I mean, yeah.
This is what they're advertising. I mean, that was Jeff Gannon. Is the website still up? I don't know. But I'm sure it's archived somewhere. You know, hotmilitarystudsforyou.com.
I mean, come on. What is this with you people? I mean, you know, I'll tell you, my in-laws are Republican evangelicals, okay? But they are Prozac, okay, into oblivion. Now, it's sad because it's something that, you know, like they don't have any feelings towards things, but they have a lot of viewpoints on how things are. And, you know, like even I ain't even going to bash on Ted because I tell you, you know, a lot of the things he said, even though there's other things he said, but a lot of the things he said, like when he was on with Barbara Walters talking about heaven, yeah, all right, you know, he was really articulate in terms of just saying, well, you know, the only confirmed way to get to heaven is by Jesus. But he didn't ever discount and say, you know, like Bush would say with, oh, how the Jews can't get into heaven. Like, he didn't even go that far. And I also think it's funny how all the other evangelicals are starting, you know, just completely abandoning this guy. Oh, this guy was nothing. What was that, Falwell or one of them fat pigs was sitting there saying, oh, I don't even know who the guy is.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you mean you don't know who the guy is? He's in charge of the largest congregation, evangelical congregation in the country.
Well, you know, but I mean, they forgot who Kenny Boy. You know, how many times did Tony Snow Slithering Scotty come out and say, well, you know, George Bush, President Bush really doesn't know Ken Lay that well at all.
Or Abramoff.
Yeah, well, but the thing with Ken Lay is if you went over to thesmokinggun.com, they had, like, years worth of correspondence between the two.
Oh, yeah, they were great buddies. I mean, they made videos. Oh, you're great for Texas. Don't leave Texas. We love you here. You know, we go and we're going to have a barbecue and go fishing. I mean, that's what pisses me off the most, is these people have no... I mean, I'm talking about people. When I say people, screw the high-ranking Republican. Forget them. I'm talking about the rank-and-file people who vote for them, the Rush Limbaugh listeners, the common people like you and I who may be a little bit greedy and they don't really, you know, they're scared and they're fearful, so they say that they're Republican, or they want to be rich, or they want people to think they're rich, so they say that they're Republican all for, you know, their own little... you know, personal responsibility and all the other nonsense, just because, you know, to hide their racism and all the other junk that we all know, it's right obvious. It's like peanut butter and jelly sandwich made of peanut butter and jelly. So when you say, you know, you poor blacks should pick yourself up by the bootstraps, I shouldn't have to pay for your Cadillac, and all this other nonsense, we all know what that is. That's peanut butter and jelly. I mean, this is ridiculous to sit there and continue with these people. And they're, I don't know Ken Lay, I don't know Abramoff, I don't know Jeff Gannon, I don't know anyone, I don't know nothing. I don't know this man in Denver. I've never had sex with him in Denver. Aspirin.
Don't ask me about Missoula.
Don't forget that, you know. Hey, come on. I'm so sick of these people, and I'm so sick of this garbage that they're turning this country into this handmaid's tale. That's what they're going to wind up doing if they ever get their way, which hopefully, I'll tell you what, this whole incident has made me believe in God twice as much. Because God sat there and said to, you know, I don't know, maybe went, you know, because I don't believe God's the way that these people say that it is. But, you know, God won't let you sit there and be a hypocrite like that because, you know, if you want to look at it in the way they do. I mean, so, like, in a sense, this is like, oh, thank you, God, for at least kind of showing proof. I mean, it's not a lightning bolt to pick up and, you know, fly these people where they deserve to be. Every time they tell us, see, if I ever had my universe, that's the kind of God I'd be. You sat there and tried to say a lie or something like that?
Yeah.
It's right there. Don't lie. You know, you sit there, oh, we're going to protect the children. Hey, kid, what are you wearing?
See, you'd have so much fun here, Albert. We got a guy here in West Virginia by the name of Don Blankenship. You need to read up on him.
Yeah.
This guy he makes $28 million a year as the head of Massey Energy, and he blows up mountains in the process.
Yeah.
And he formed a little front group called AndForTheSakeOfTheKids.com. And for the sake of the kids.com has done nothing. He's funneled $1 million or more into West Virginia's legislative elections.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, but you know, it's for the sake of the kids. And he runs ads saying, you know, my candidates will fight to keep drunk drivers from having a driver's license. Their opponent, the Democrat, said that he wants drunk drivers to have licenses all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and no, but I'd like to move Don Blankenship into God Albert's world so you could hear him say that and just, yeah, that's enough, Don.
Yep. I mean, I'm so sick. I mean, seriously. I mean, I'm not alone. I know I'm not alone in saying how sick I am of this stuff. And
well, sure, America is sick of this stuff, or at least normal America or decent America. I don't know what to call it anymore, Albert. But that part of America that was never stupid enough to vote for George Bush.
Exactly.
They're disgusted.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, does it translate into something on Tuesday? I have to hope that it does.
I do, too. And I do think that, you know, as long as we don't, I mean, I'm telling you, I'm going to be voting. Everyone that I know, I tell them that's what, I mean, I don't let people in the store get by me without saying, you're going to go vote. But, you know, so, you know, I mean, it's about that. I mean, we get out there in numbers, there's way more of us than there is them. So, and I do hope that the young people who are really going to be impacted, see, I'm 29 years old, so I'm kind of getting past that point. But I really do hope that these young people sit there and wake up and get off their little rears and, you know, shut off their little television and, you know, turn off the iPod or whatever and get in for 5 minutes. It's all it takes.
Yeah, well, I really hope they do too, Albert, because if they don't, well, you know, it's them that my generation and the generation ahead of me is actively screwing. I mean, we're partially screwing ourselves, but they're the ones, and the teenagers and the kids that are your kids' age and my kids' age, those are the ones we're really putting the wood to with these stinking Republican policies.
The tax cuts, the restrictions on civil liberties and the restrictions on just, I mean, you know, they try, oh, sodomy is not a right. It's not about having them. You freaks.
Yeah, and well, I mean, when your kids get to be your age or my age, even, I can imagine a world where their kids look at them and go, "Mommy, Daddy, you mean the government used to actually do something like build roads and stuff? They did that?"
Wait, it's probably going to be more like, "Mommy, Daddy, that there was such a thing as a government." I thought it was PepsiCo and Starbucks and all the corporate. Hey, that's what it's going to.
Yeah, and just kind of cruise into that rollerball world.
Rollerball, Blade Runner world. And that's sad. Come on. The world can be such a better place than that. We can just sit there. And, you know, I hate to say this, but we need alien spaceships to land on the White House lawn.
We need the whole the day the Earth stood still thing to go down.
Yeah. And they need, I don't want them to come give us tech. Nah, nothing like that. I just want them to come down. Like, so people, maybe we would stop fighting amongst ourselves with this nonsense, just complete and utter, not going to war, killing 655,000, spending $340 billion of our children's future. Over what? Over what? I mean, how close are we now to chaos over there? I mean, we're what, a fraction of an inch? I mean, and they try to say that we're winning? They try to say all this, oh, we're not going to retreat? Retreat, we're getting destroyed. We lost 105 men. But they sat there, did you see that? Oh, these kids, they're fighting over nerds. Did you?
we live there.
Halloween, yeah. That's how they get the drug. That's the gateway drug, is Halloween.
Yeah, nerds, gateway drug.
Exactly.
And then there are nerd ropes. Oh, my God, don't even go there.
Pixie sticks, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you know how after you'd lifted them to your mouth enough times, the stuff begins to stick to the sidewalls, and then you have to find the scissors and open it up and lick it out, because you gotta have the last of the pixie dust.
Don't anyone ever say that my job is easy. That's all I'm gonna say, because it's unbelievable. You know, I mean, but the same thing is, if I could do this with twin girls, these people could sit there and be responsible enough to make sure that this country doesn't collapse into the nonsense that they're trying to make it collapse into. I mean, we all know that they're the ones with all the resources, they're the ones with all the money, but, you know, that doesn't mean that just because you have it all, that you have to keep it all like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Now, see, that's not hard for normal, decent people to comprehend. You know, but it hides behind this very, very effective Republican smokescreen of, well, you know, we're going to have tax cuts because we believe that you should get to keep more of your own money. Yeah, I know.
Cuts. Yeah, you please. Yeah, give it Paris Hilton, the tax guy. I mean, you know, Mark Levine, they were talking about they were doing their little opposite world there and there. You know, I mean, you see them commercials. Oh, he wants to tax me when I die. Oh, shut up. You normal retarded idiot. I mean, you're talking about, you know,
what are you going to care when you're dead?
That, number one. But the thing is, who are you kidding? That you think you have $300 million, $500 million in your estate? You freak. You're lucky you have Social Security. and you're trying to get cut your own throat and the throat of everyone else by trying to get rid of that because you want to invest it into the stock market.
Well, you know, it reminds me of the definition of the Judas goat.
Yeah.
You know, the Judas goat is the one that they get to lead the rest of them. And it walks up to the slaughter, meh,
yep.
You know.
Yeah.
Just as happy as you. Tax cuts.
Yeah, we should keep more of our money. Well, you know what? We should be actually fighting for
less government.
Yeah. Well, I mean, come on. I mean, yeah, taxes are, you know, right, taxes are taxes, okay? And, yeah, we don't like to see a little less taxes. And we actually, what we'd really like, what I'd like to do, is I would like to be able to say where my money goes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like, really,
sure, fill out a tax return every year and say not a damn dime to the Pentagon.
That's it right there. I mean, now what would happen? I mean, that would actually give us a little bit more control. I mean, yeah, because, you know, the Congress, they could sit there and they can, you know, in the Senate, they can create all these laws and, you know, systems, and they could say, well, this is how much we want to spend on this and this and this and this. But they would be limited and hamstrung by the people who would say, well, I only want to give 20%. Of my money to defense. Because nobody wants to sit there and the world is still paranoid. People are still scared.
Yeah.
They're frightened of their own shadow. So nobody's going to say, well, I don't want to. I personally would get rid of it, or I wouldn't put a dime into them because they're just disgusting swine.
Well, until they can manage to run a war without screwing it up, until they can tell the difference between a war they can win and a war that they can't, until they can set up an accounting system where they don't lose money by the billions of dollars, you know, that just rattles out of their pockets into the sofa.
Trillions. I need medicine because it's disgusting.
Yeah.
How do you lose trillions of dollars?
It was sitting right here and I turned my back and it's gone. You know, it was all in $100,000 bills, so it wasn't that big a pile.
And the media, our liberal media. Yeah, you think they would actually be, I mean, just a tenth of the intensity that I feel about.
Do you remember William Proxmire?
No.
Great senator from your state.
I'm not an original Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. Well, he used to have something he called the Golden Fleece Award. And he would hand these things out from the floor of the Senate for wasteful government spending.
Yeah.
You know, the poor man, if you were to visit his grave, and just like sink a spade 2 inches into the earth, you'd find it's all smooth because it's nothing but spinning in there. Yeah. The Bush administration, Republican government in general, you know, because this goes back to Reagan and Bush, too. It's nothing but golden fleecing. You know, anybody remember Bechtel? Yeah, we didn't just hear about Bechtel because of the Iraq War.
No.
Bechtel, you know, Bechtel was up to its knuckles in sleaze during the Reagan administration. Who was it? The George Shultz, Secretary of State.
Yep.
Wasn't he?
Same.
Yeah, he was a Bechtel honcho back then.
Yeah, it is funny. You mentioned Herb Bloch the last time we talked, and while he was vaguely familiar to me, anything I hear that I'm not completely 100% about, I go and do some research on it. That guy was, man, I wish we could resurrect him.
Yeah.
Because he had the eye, and he could see and draw it. I mean, and it is funny how it's like, you know, you'd see, you know, he'd do one president, you know, Hoover or whatever, and then it would be, you know, then it would be the same exact situation for Nixon, and the same exact situation for Reagan, and it's, you know, like in the same exact situation it would be exactly for Bush 1, and a lot of his cartoons he could just actually just change the face, and it's up to date and current. And we see all this stuff. I mean, we talk about number one, we're number one. No, we're not, and we need to become number one. And this is what we have to do. I mean, you know, and I don't know if Nancy Pelosi and the rest of them can deliver this for us. But, I mean, I think anything away from the hellfire and brimstone that they're sending, that these Republicans are the trail that they're leading us down, anything a step away from that has got to be better than where we're going. I mean, I do think that that's why, you know, so many people, maybe, you know, if we see a complete baloney and another election is stolen, maybe that'll do it. Maybe at the same time when these people sit there and actually wake up and do vote and we do win back the Senate and the House, and you know, I would think that with all the outrages and all the problems and all the horrors that we have seen the last 6 years, I mean, we went from hope to now. And I don't know if that's enough to say, but look at where we are now. You know, well, look at this. We're now responsible. You are responsible for the death of 655,000 people.
Yeah, that would be 0.6 million. You know, there's different ways of looking at numbers.
I mean, look at it in terms of, look at it compared to our population of 300 million. I mean, if you sat there and did the math, what is it, 2%, boom, 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 what is that? 6 million or 2 million, 4 million, whatever it is. That's genocidal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that kind of level. And, you know, you say, oh, well, you hate the troops, and I love, oh, you got to love what they said about Kerry. You morons. can't you seriously listen to more than 10 seconds of a conversation without having that little chip of RAM in your head blank out? If everyone had a computer in their head, they have Atari's 2600s.
Oh, yeah, trash 80s.
Yeah, it's just, what are you talking about? Didn't you hear what he said all this time before? You know, don't be like Bush. Go and do your schoolwork and da-da-da-da. And you won't make the mistake of bringing a country into Iraq. I mean, he didn't say it as clearly as that, but that's what he said. But, oh, no, that's a big issue. My foot, that's a big issue, because look at Reverend Ted. Reverend Ted, Mr. Methamphetamine massage parlor visiting. Yeah, I love how he didn't know it's a hotel either. You got to love that.
Yeah,
I don't know. You just are just...
It's prayer meeting. Hey, Albert, we got to roll on. We're late for the news.
Have a great weekend. I'll talk
you
to
too. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, to the news, and quickly. This is Head On.
Crimes trial is expected on Sunday. In preparation for possible violence, Iraq's defense minister has canceled all soldiers' vacation leave. The New York Times reports that the U.S. government agency, which has revealed corruption and mismanagement of U.S. reconstruction efforts in Iraq, is being shut down by the Bush administration. The office of the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction was quietly removed from this year's military budget at the last minute. At Fort Bragg, a U.S. National Guard soldier was charged with murdering two superior officers in Iraq last year. This is the first reported fragging incident during the Iraq War. British citizens consider George Bush a bigger threat to world peace than North Korea's Kim Jong-il. That's according to a report released today by London's Guardian. 69% of those polled think U.S. foreign policy has made the world less safe. In the Gaza Strip, Israeli troops killed 14 Palestinians today. Two women were killed and 10 wounded when they attempted to act as human shields between Palestinian gunmen and Israeli soldiers. This week, 36 Palestinians and one Israeli soldier have been killed in the fighting. The president of the National Association of Evangelicals has stepped down following allegations that he had a long-running relationship with a male prostitute. The interim leader of the group says the Reverend Ted Haggard has admitted to some, but not all, of the alleged indiscretions. In California, nearly 2,300 prison inmates may soon be moved to other states to relieve California's overcrowding. The inmates will be moved to privately run prisons in Arizona, Indiana, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. In Texas, live images from 8 cameras stationed along the Texas-Mexico border are now being broadcast on the web. Homeland Security officials are asking viewers to call in if they think they see immigrants sneaking over the border. In Southern California, funerals began today for the 5 firefighters killed in the Esperanza wildfire. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The U.S. Maritime Weather Agency reports that greenhouse gases in the atmosphere reached a record high last year and are still increasing. Flat keyboards could reduce hospital deaths. This research in from Britain, where the deadly hospital virus MRSA kills over 5,000 patients a year. The antibiotic-resistant staph infection was found on a fourth of all hospital keyboards tested, and switching to flat keyboards, which are easier to clean, could reduce transmission. In the U.S., an estimated 90,000 people are killed by MRSA and other hospital-acquired infections each year. Politics may indeed be in the blood. Researchers at the University of Nebraska have studied the political views of 8,000 sets of identical and fraternal twins and have found that there may be a genetic component to political beliefs. In Iowa, a district court has ordered Bill Gates and Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer to appear later this month in a class action suit charging the company with anti-competitive practices. The suit asks $450 million for Iowans who purchased Microsoft software since 1994. As expected, Continental, American, and Delta Airlines have announced fare increases of $10 per round trip. It's the 22nd fare hike by U.S. Airlines in the last 2 years. Light sweet crude settled at $59.14 a barrel today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones closed down 32 points at 11,986. The NASDAQ was down 3 at 2331. And the S&P 500 was down 3 at 1364. There's more at Quality News.
Smart business.
A gallon of gas and a gallon of milk. That's what 1 hour of minimum wage work will buy. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
When the plant closed, I took this job paying just a little more than the minimum wage. But I still can't support my family. Somebody should raise the bar.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Alrighty then, 7 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob, this is Head On. There is so much stuff out there. There is so much filth through which we must wade in order to get to some semblance of decency and freedom and a return to normalcy as of November the 7th. So very much. In conjunction with this Ted Haggard business. And see, I've been gone for a couple of days, and I'm not sure what you guys have heard and what you haven't heard. But you've got to add in this other story about, oh my God, Republican National Committee. And see, this started coming out after the Harold Ford ad. I mean, and you remember, this is the one with the Harold, call me, that in it. But also contained therein is this seedy-looking guy, who looks like he's got an IQ of about, you know, his shoe size, with a pair of dark glasses and a cheesy mustache, and he says, so Harold took money from porn producers. I mean, who hasn't? And then he gets this, oh, I shouldn't have said that look on his face. Harold took money from porn producers. And so last week, a few days ago, it starts leaking out. I guess probably with talking a story about porn producers, leaking's not a good word, is it? This is these things are hard to get. Oh, not that word either. It turns out that Chinless Ken Mellman and the Republican National Committee have for years been taking money, and lots of it, relatively speaking, from Marina Pacific Distributors. Now, in describing themselves, Marina Pacific Distributors call themselves the leader in adult video distribution. Okay, first of all, I am not some sort of holy Joe Lieberman type who's going to criticize somebody for their sex life or how they enjoy it, okay? I think there's a reasonable drawing of the line as to making sure that the people in the movies are not A, harmed, B, are consenting, and C, aren't children. Okay? So you and your significant other want to watch a dirty movie and get it on? So what? So what? I mean, there are other things you could be watching before you get it on that are grosser. I mean, you know, if you're watching Barney the Purple Dinosaur and it makes you want to do it, that's sick. But, you know, so I got no problem with pornography. The only problem I have with pornography is the incessant desire of the right wing to define it as whatever they say it is as opposed to what I think it is. I think pornography is 655,000 dead people in Iraq who never raised a finger against us, and we killed them anyway. I think that's pornography. I think pornography is a guy at the Food and Drug Administration in charge of decisions regarding women's health who once wrote a book encouraging women to read the Bible to make PMS go away. I find that pornographic. So please understand, as we go through this story, I am not inveighing against or railing against pornography. Once again, it's about the hypocrisy. I mean, I'm so sick of all this right-wing Holy Joe Lieberman stuff that I could just vomit. I mean, it's gotten to where, I mean, I live in a very small place. It's very rural. Small town America. And so I see this, there's one little store around here that carries peach knee-high. Yes, I know, I shouldn't drink pop. For those of you in some other part of the country, otherwise known as soda. Or if you're below the Mason-Dixie line, it's all Coke. But there's one place around here that carries peach knee-high. And I love peach knee-high. It's wonderful. You open it up, and I mean, you take a drink, and it's everything but the fuzz. It tastes like a peach. It's yummy. There's one place around here that carries it, so I go in from time to time, and I buy a six-pack of this stuff. So I go in, and I buy it, and there's a little old blue-haired lady behind me. And she's got a political button on her coat. And it shows a coal miner crawling, you know, it's a silhouette of a coal miner on his knees crawling through the dark. You can see the rays coming out from his little headlamp. And it's Pete Segler for State Senate. And so we're walking out of the grocery store, and I just turn to her, and I look at her, and I say, haven't heard of this guy. And I, honest to God, I hadn't. I haven't heard of this guy. Is he a Democrat or a Republican? And she looks at me and she says, he's a Republican. Who's he running against? He's running against, and gives me the candidate's name, and who is a Democrat, who is my state senator, and a very, very good human being. And then in a very conspiratorial whisper, leans toward me and says, he's openly gay, you know. And just little explosions took place inside my skull because I had the, it was one of those flashes. And I could see inside that woman's mind. I could see, like, the last 7 days of her life. I could see her sitting in the pews at her stinking right-wing church being told by some preacher, he's openly gay. And no, I wasn't as quick as I should have been. I should have looked at her and said, well, was it the openly part or the gay part that you object to? But instead, I just looked at her and whispered, leaned back in all conspiratorial-like and whispered back at her, so I take it then that you're openly bigoted? And, you know, the little jaw dropped, and I leaned over again. I said, how do you feel about the Negras? And she started to sputter. I looked at her and I said, well, Pete Sigler, you, me, gay, straight, black, white, guess God made us all, didn't he? Good day, madam. You know, it wouldn't have done for me to have screamed at her. God knows I wanted to. But I try not to be that kind of a person. But that's a bit of an aside, but that's where we are. And damn it, I'm not going to put up with it anymore. He's openly gay. Ah, so you're openly bigoted? So all this is prelude. Yeah, the Republican National Committee tries to crucify Harold Ford. He took money from porno producers. No, it turns out it's the Republican National Committee that's taken money from porno producers. It's Marina Pacific Distributors, the leader in adult video distribution. And included in the movies for sale on their website are movies by a company called Active Duty Productions. You remember when I was talking with Albert a little bit ago and I mentioned hotmilitarystudsforyou.com, the thing that Jeff Gannon had up there? This is another of the same sort of Active Duty Productions. They cast active duty military personnel in their porno movies. As it turns out, I mean, Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for John Kerry for a minute, okay? God, you know, I didn't want him to come out and apologize. He didn't owe anybody an apology. There's not a soldier on earth that he owed an apology to. But just like I told you the other night, the last time we were here, Tuesday evening, what did I tell you? I said it took about a week to make Dick Durbin apologize for not insulting the troops. And yes, it's a little bit disturbing that we now live in a country where you are not allowed to say anything bad whatsoever about anybody in the military. Go check your 14 defining characteristics of fascism and see where that falls into the equation. So, yeah, Active Duty Productions, he said duty, cast active duty military personnel in their porno movies. Let's see, Bareback Recruits, Bareback Recruits 2, Bareback Recruits 3, and then this. Three Fort Bragg soldiers were found guilty and sentenced to prison in separate courts-martial earlier this year for appearing in pornographic videos made by Active Duty Productions. Charges included sodomy and conduct detrimental to the Army. Four other soldiers also accused of appearing in active duty videos were also punished outside of the military court system. Who owes who an apology? Does the Republican National Committee owe an apology to the troops for taking money from people who have exploited soldiers and gotten them thrown in Leavenworth? Huh? HotMilitaryStudsForYou.com. Active Duty Productions. Who owes who an apology? Punished outside the military court system. Just, I think that means drummed out. Now, the Marina Pacific Their president is Nicolas Boyas. He's contributed to the Republican Party six times to the Republican National Committee, donations ranging from $200 to $500 and around $2,000 in total. Who owes whom an apology? Asked about the soldiers who were sent to prison for appearing in the films, a spokesman for Marina Pacific said they made a choice. They were of legal age. Who owes whom an apology? And, of course, you know, I think the idea that they were prosecuted at all, the idea that there is a sodomy charge in the United States military is just sickening. Let's see. Who needs to be in prison more? Some guys who appeared in Bareback Recruits, or, oh, let's jump over just a second. The true stories of how American troops killed in Iraq actually died keep spilling out this week. This from editor and publisher. On Tuesday, let's go to, and I know a lot of you are already aware of this, one of the first female soldiers killed in Iraq, it turns out. Now, bear in mind, they lied to the family. The Army lied. Oh, he's saying something bad about the Army. Oh, Jesus, he needs to apologize to the military. Oh! The Army lied to the family of Elisa Peterson. Better buckle in for this one, Agnes. When she quit this mortal coil, Elisa Peterson was 27 years old. She was from Flagstaff, Arizona. She was with C Company, 311th Military Intelligence Battalion, 101st Airborne. She was an Arabic-speaking interrogator assigned to the prison at a U.S. airbase in Tal Afar, northwest Iraq. All the government would say was that she died on September 15th, 2003 from a, quote, non-hostile weapons discharge. What does that mean? Sounds like, I don't know, non-hostile weapons discharge. Maybe the gun went off while she was cleaning it or something. Or No. What it turns out is that a very intrepid radio and newspaper reporter by the name of Kevin Elston started digging through the filth and the lies of the United States military. And he dug and he dug and he dug and he dug. And he finally found out, remember, she was an interrogator, she was an Arabic speaker. Elisa Peterson objected to the interrogation methods that were being used on people brought in to the prison at the airbase. She was in the unit for two nights and then refused to work any further in this unit. It was called the cage. The spokespersons for her unit refused to say what sort of interrogation techniques were used, and as a follow-up, the records for those techniques have been destroyed. So she refused to participate in the cage activities. God only knows what they were. But, I mean, we have stories from other veterans of people, breaking shin bones with ball bats, sticking various and sundry things up the rectums of interrogation victims. We've seen the photos from Abu Ghraib. She refused to be a party to that filth. She was sent to the base gate where she monitored Iraqi guards. Then came September 15, 2003, when she took her service rifle and ended her own life in a non-military weapons discharge. Who owes whom an apology? How about all those babbling, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, wing-nut freaks who screamed, John Kerry's talking bad about the military, when he was calling George Bush a bleeding idiot? Do they owe an apology to the military? Yes, they do. And, you know, I was kind of hard on John Kerry the other night. Maybe I owe him an apology myself, and if I do, I tender that freely. We would have been better off without all of it. But you know what? When there are stories of... So the question I have for you is, who needs to be in prison? Four guys who were in bareback recruits 1, 2, 3, and 4? Or the people who were running the cage at Tal Afar? Baby, this isn't Abu Ghraib. This is Tal Afar. This is something we haven't heard of before. A unit called the Cage. And it was so bad that Elisa Peterson, 27 years old, refused to participate. It was so bad, it preyed so thoroughly upon her conscience that she ended her existence on this little blue-green marble time machine hurtling through space. What do you have to see over the course of 2 days, 48 hours? What do you have to do? What do you have to be asked to do? What do you have to hear? How loud do the screams have to be so that they reverberate in your sleep, or that in the 2 short days you were there, that it gets so bad that you put the muzzle of a gun in your mouth and make your brains go away? To make the screams go away. To make the visuals go away. Now you tell me who needs to be in prison. Four gay guys who made a movie? Or however many sick bastards were involved at Tal Afar in torture? Tell me. Because you know what? I'm not going to sit here and say the military's bad. I'm going to say that there are bad people running the military. And that somebody who got their lecture about refusing an illegal order. Interesting. They put her. They just changed her duty assignment, didn't they? They didn't send her to the brig. They didn't incarcerate her for refusing a direct order, did they? Huh. I wonder why. Do you suppose it's because had they tried to charge her with something, it would have turned out that she was correct under the laws of this nation and of the Nuremberg tribunals in refusing to participate in war crimes? And instead... Oh, instead... 27 years old in 2003. Would have been a 30-year-old now. Who owes who an apology? Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Ed joins us from Fayette County, West Virginia. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Sounds like a very disgusting topic. It's too bad it isn't fiction instead of true.
I wish it was fiction. Honestly do.
Well, you know, there's more stuff like that going on than just that under the conditions that's over there. And it's no wonder a lot of them don't have it. And, you know, a lot of the boys are saying there is no hope now. You know, a lot of they're split. They love and... The ones that I think are saying that they're glad to be there and glad to serve us, if they didn't, they'd probably do the same thing. They've got to have some hope of winning or getting out of there alive, and I guess that's one way of doing it. But I wanted to bring up a subject. Did you see or hear yesterday where George Bush said he inherited the war?
Yeah, I ran across that. Who did you catch it at? Who did he say he inherited it from?
I don't know.
Saddam? I mean, Clinton? Oh, my God.
Well, it's got to be Bill Clinton. It was probably over that dress. But I couldn't believe it, you know. And the thing of it is probably some of the Americans that have short memory, no memory, and don't want to remember will believe that garbage when he, for days ahead of when he started that invasion, gave warning that in March of such and such a date that he was going to, that's what he was giving Saddam the chance to step down, get out of the country or whatever. And then in addition to that, he wants to know what the Democrats, what their plan is for getting out of that mess.
We didn't
make the mess.
No, we didn't. Yeah, okay, I've broken the cookie jar and the cookies are all over the floor. What's your plan for cleaning it up?
That's exactly right. And, you know, I wonder what his plan is. I mean, for sure it ain't working. He's had years, not months, to clear it up.
You know, it just blows my mind, Ed, when I think about the fact that in the time it's taken George Bush to screw up Iraq, we defeated Italy, Japan, Germany, and started war crimes trials.
Yeah, but the worst part of it is yet to come. You know, those folks are never going to forgive us. You know, their grandchildren are going to be told about what happened there and what the United States is, and their Bush has created a nest of hatred that will hatch for 100 years or more, maybe never get over it. But I couldn't believe that he stood up and said that he had inherited the war. You know, I really believe the guy is mentally disturbed.
You know, I'm glad I didn't actually see it, Ed, because that's the kind of stuff that makes you put bricks through televisions.
Yeah, that's what I felt like, getting up and picking up that thing and throwing it plumb. If he could have been walking by, I'd have thrown it at him if I could have picked it up. But he's the kind of guy that starved to death the biscuit around his neck if you turn him loose.
Yeah.
But, we have a war going on. The one that he started is the war. You know, they're talking about, we have a war going on, we got to do such and such. It's the war he started. We just don't happen to have a war going on. We have a war, a George Bush war. And I hope there's enough of Democrats that listen that can recall some of the stuff I've said here, especially about him inheriting the war, and how are the Democrats going to get out of it? They have no plan. What is his plan?
He didn't start the war. The Democrats aren't president. The Democrats aren't in charge of the military. It's George Bush that has to have a plan.
You're talking about passing the buck. It goes on back to, it gets to him, and then he turns it around and passes it right back to the.
Yeah, Harry Truman had the buck stops here on his desk. George Bush has a sign that says the buck stops somewhere.
And then goes to Halliburton, I reckon. Said they'd like to see the war over. Well, the Democrats can't do it because we're not in charge. And they talk about this economy. What a hoax that is. Bob, there is over 300,000 unemployed right now. 18,000 new added last week, new applicants for benefits. And when Ford goes through, I can't even speculate on how many of the proposed 175,000 jobs that are going to be tried to be bought out and so forth. But around each auto job, there are 7 jobs that revolve around that in steel, rubber, and et cetera.
Sure.
You know. When you're talking about 175,000, then go on up about seven times that, and you're going to find out. And they holler about the economy is so good and talk about the stock market, but most people don't realize the stock market, the way I understand it anyway, is what drives those stocks up are the big companies eating up another one. It's not people being able to have a lot of money to put in it anymore. And if I'm wrong on that, you can correct me. But that's the way I see it.
No, I don't take issue with that, Ed.
Yeah, but it's just disgusting how they turn things around. And when you get hot on them, they either hang up on you, or I had someone here a while back on national news give me 30 seconds to finish it because he couldn't stand what I was saying. And then, of course, the morning show here, Idiot O'Brien, he's gotten worse since he's had to apologize to that guy named Kessler. He asked someone this morning, were they born in a cage? And you could tell the person was very educated and very knowledgeable. And a heathen like him asked him if they was born in. He's living proof that the buffaloes made it.
Well, but
yeah. Else besides buffalo.
Very true, Ed. But of course, you know, a little of this is inside baseball for folks around the country. But I've mentioned this creepy goon a couple of times, and yesterday he got his comeuppance, didn't he? I mean, it made the front page of the paper this morning. This creep's name is, for folks who don't know, is Steve O'Brien, and he used to, when I did, in the bad old days of terrestrial radio, when I would do the night slot, he did the morning slot. And I mean, he's a real monkey.
Yeah.
Just a right wing, what Bart Kopp would call a banana eater. I mean, just. Yeah, that's being. But he was allowed to question our congressman, a decent human being, Nick Rahal, at a Chamber of Commerce breakfast yesterday morning.
I heard part of it, yes, before 9 o'clock yesterday.
And you know, he got up and tried to lambast Nick Rahal, who's been on this program, and saying you know, a bunch of tawdry crap about West Virginia. West Virginia's bad, business climate's bad. You know, we're blah blah blah, blah, blah. The same old crap that he delivers on a usual basis.
Yeah, and that. Rahal was a terrorist, and
oh yeah, he's called him all kinds of stuff.
He did it this morning, but you call in there and try to give him some facts. Which, if you give a Republican facts, then they become a Democrat. You know, if you pump the crap out of them and give them the truth, and if they will recognize the truth, they might make a good Democrat. But they're not. They travel in the blind and in denial. And
they go by belief and not by knowledge.
And you know what? It ain't too late yet to picket L&S Toyota and the ones that put stuff on there and let an idiot like him get on there. I'm telling you, he's out of his mind. There is something drastically wrong with him. You know, he's got the Dirty Dozen that follow him like a bunch of pups after the mother dog, you know.
Yeah.
So it's disgusting, but I listen to it so I can see how bad it is and give them down the road or whatever you want to call it when they get through with it.
Yeah.
But he's probably helped that fella named Mel Kessler a whole lot by running his mouth on him like he has and cutting him off. You know, he'll say, well, that's good, Mel, and this, you know, and then just hang up on him. And that's kind of stuff that when they get to truth or people's got facts to deal with, then that's the results you get. And
well, that's when the screaming starts.
Yeah, and that's when a woman called in, and he absolutely asked her if she was born in a cave. And you talk about somebody who's been born in a cave.
Yes.
And, you know, the pitiful part of it is he'd have to get an honest job if his wife didn't support him.
That's
Well, it's hard. I can tell you this much. It's nobody's going to get rich doing that over there.
Yeah. Well, the point I'm making is that he ought to stand up and be a man, quit hiding behind a woman's skirts. That's the kind of man he is. That's the kind of moderator, narrator, or nut eater, or whatever he is. I tell you what, well, I can't tell you on the radio.
No, I understand.
When we talk, I just wondered how he liked golf balls. But anyway, you know,
don't yell it, you know.
And, oh no, I'd holler two for him. He's not man enough to take four. But he's I hope the Democrats in this surrounding area don't listen to the pure garbage that he puts out. I've never heard such stuff. And if that Kessler or Bird happens to win Wednesday morning, I'm going to call in and ask him to give me the count on that. If you listen, you'll hear me get hung up on. But, you know, it's a pleasure to bust his hind end. All this stuff, wonder what they're going to talk about after that.
Well, you know, I'm hoping there'll be a lot of good news Wednesday morning. And at that point, you know, I don't know. I think maybe they've got the capacity for about 12 and a half people on that stream over there. But I ought to put up the stream so people can hear this idiot in action.
Yeah, Bob, I really wish you would and then counter it, because that's the only chance we got of doing that, of getting him and bringing him down to where he is. And, you know, there was many calls made to Sutherland. And, of course, he went around. It was hardly recognized it as an apology the first morning he'd done that. And then many calls was made back to Sutherland on the way that he didn't mind mentioning Kessler's name on the first one and running his mouth on him. But on the second one now, he mentioned it, and he absolutely hates Mel Kessler's guts now.
Oh, he hates Democrats' guts. I mean, or at least that's the put. See, that's the thing. I think he's fundamentally dishonest. If somebody would pay him to be a liberal or be a progressive, he would probably be a bigger lefty than I am, because he has no morals.
Well, I don't think he has the brains to be one. You know, that's the difference between you and him. You can figure stuff out how it really is. And at first I thought, well, you know, a long time ago, I thought, he's doing all this crap to imitate Rush Limbaugh or one of them and to draw attention. But I'm convinced he believes that garbage. You know, his brain is putting upside down and cut in two, I think.
Yeah, just like the motherboard on the computer I was working on. He's got a dead short in it somewhere. Yeah.
He shorted out somewhere. But I just can't say on the radio what a MF he is, and that ain't my friend either.
No, I think everybody comprehends that, Ed.
So if there's anything I can ever do to help him out
the window of a plane,
all he has to do is just call.
Well, that's because you're a good human being. You're that kind of guy, Ed.
Yeah. I practice all the time.
Yes, you do. Ed, you
Bob,
take care.
Thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
And just keep up the good work, and I'm going to be listening to you.
All right. All right. Thanks, Ed. That don't mean my friend. Let's go to Andy calling from the UK. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How's things?
Getting better, I think.
You did.
Having a working computer just goes a long way toward an internet broadcast.
Yeah, it does help just a little.
Yeah, my throat gets a little rough when I try to do it by standing out on the porch and screaming.
Yeah, it doesn't really work too well, does it? It's quite faint over here when you do that. Oh, dear. Well, have you serviced the car in preparation for, what is it, Tuesday the election's on?
Yes.
Okay, have you serviced the car in preparation for your drive to D.C. on Wednesday?
I'm thinking we'll take the train.
Fair enough, it's probably easier. Although you know they'll just switch the trains off or switch them to different stations.
Yeah, I'll be like Daffy Duck. I could have sworn I should have taken that left turn at Albuquerque.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, it happened the last time, didn't it? When there was a major demonstrations in Washington. Mysteriously enough, Amtrak suddenly stopped running services to Washington.
That's true. I'd forgotten that.
Mm-hmm. Take your car.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Oh, dear. Good luck, America. Kind of what I feigned up to say tonight.
Yeah. Do the right thing. Get it right.
Well, my problem is I'm sure you will. I mean, the BBC reports on Republican voters have all been, we've got to get these bums out. Just about every single person they've had on BBC reports in the last few weeks have been, no, we've got to get these out. All Republican. Yeah, I'm a Republican. No, George Bush isn't. Got to get him out. Got to vote for the Democrats. And that's been all over the place. My problem is not that people are going to do that. My problem is that it won't matter.
Yeah, that no matter what they do, it'll... Well, you may be right, Andy. Our good friend Brad Friedman and I were talking a couple of nights ago. He said he's convinced that there will be an election meltdown of epic proportions on Tuesday. You know, just based on what's already happening with the early voting, with the vote flipping in Florida and Texas and Missouri and Arkansas. You know, you press the button for the Democrat and you get to the final screen where you finalize your vote, and lo and behold, you've pressed a Republican.
Yeah.
And you go back and you vote for the Democrat again, and you get to the final screen, and you're still voting for the Republican.
Well, I'm not surprised, you know. I'm not surprised at all. I mean, I'm trying to think of a way forwards without using a whole bunch of swear words. Basically, these filthy scumbags will do whatever it takes to maintain power, and if that takes George Bush signing martial law and sending the army into the streets, that's what he'll do. Never mind that he's only got 10,000 soldiers left in the whole of the United States. You know, never mind all of that. He'll still sign the orders, and it'll all go to pot.
Well, and I assume you've read about that law.
Yeah, well, it's already there for him, isn't it?
Yeah, he's already signed it, you know, quietly, not a lot of noise. But it allows him to use... U.S. troops on U.S. soil in complete contravention of things like posse comitatus.
Yeah. Don't you wish you'd never given up the king or queen?
See, I've still got a sticking point about somebody who thinks that the nature of their birth compels their ability to rule me, but, you know.
I know, we all know that that's nothing to do with it. We just know that if we have a head of state who's rich, they can't be corrupted.
Yeah, but...
Andy, the
Bushes are filthy rich, and they want more.
But there's a difference between we make them rich and they make themselves rich by robbing us. There's a very big difference. We pay the Queen's wages out of our taxes, and for that we get a head of state who doesn't try to tell us what to do. It's a very even arrangement.
Okay, well, that might actually be... Maybe we need to up presidential pay.
Well, maybe. I think you need to downgrade a whole load of senators and congressmen's pay, though.
Well, I would tend to concur.
Mm.
But... There are times when that's the problem here, Andy. You know, the Constitution was written by geniuses who tried to come up with every possible eventuality, and they even tried to allow through the impeachment process that's contained in the Constitution to allow for the fact that babbling idiots and absolutely corrupt, dirty monsters would occasionally come to power. And so they put something in there where decent, normal, the people who supposedly love their country would say, okay, this guy's got to go.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the worst thing about that whole impeachment point is that they keep arguing, oh, you can't impeach, there's 2 years till an election. News for you. In your country, there's always 2 years till an election.
Right, there's always an election just around the corner.
Which, I mean, I think is a silly system. You should have everyone on the same time. It's much easier if you can just throw them all out in one go, trust me. We've had to do that over here a couple of times in the past. I suspect it's going to be coming up as soon as the economy falls apart over here.
Well, I'd kind of like that. Of course, my personal belief is that the real change in this process, Andy, lies in... public financing of political campaigns.
Oh, well, we've been talking about that for years over here, but nothing's ever happened.
Well, we talk about it a lot, too, and other very, very simple laws, things that I've advocated, like thou shalt not take so much as one thin dime from a lobbyist.
You've already got anti-corruption.
And we don't enforce them.
To be enforced.
And we spend millions of dollars a year on lawyers who look for loopholes.
Well, that's the problem with laws. I think you all need to get down and rewrite them all. What we need to do with all of our laws, it's worse in our country, but the lawyers aren't quite so exploitative, so it doesn't actually work out worse. We need to sit down and rewrite all the laws in plain, simple, unambiguous English. Like, you are not allowed to kill, not even if you think God told you to. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just carry on. You are not allowed to steal.
Well, that's, I mean, these people are so obsessed with, these people who are so obsessed with the Ten Commandments, you know, I'm told that in Hebrew it's the ten words or the ten no-nos or something like that. It's really simple. And thou shalt not kill. I mean, it's a teeny tiny sentence, and it doesn't have caveats.
No.
And it doesn't have loopholes. And it doesn't have weasel room.
No, and it's one of the few religious imperatives that's actually made it into law. So there's got to be a certain amount of sense in there somewhere if it's made it into law.
Well,
you know what I mean? We didn't take up the other ones. You're not supposed to covet your neighbor's ass, but you can if you like. And you're certainly not supposed to take your neighbor's wife.
Or his oil reserves.
Well, that's very true. But remember, it didn't say in the Bible explicitly, you are not to take brown people's oil. Didn't say that, Bob.
I know. And it's okay to have a war in Iraq and kill 0.6 million people, 2.8% of the Iraqi population. It's okay to do that because St. Peter had a sword.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jesus said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all right for George Bush to do whatever he likes because the word executive is in the Constitution.
Yeah.
You know, it's all ridiculous. This is the
kind of stuff that people used to come up with. You know, people would get, in the late 60s, early 70s, people would get really, really high and listen to Beatles albums and play Led Zeppelin backwards and stuff like that and then come up with the, just, my God, did you see Paul McCartney's barefoot on the, you know, and what was an innocuous little thing, these people went on to take power in government and applied the same standards they used to, you know, sit around stoned in the dorm room doing to running government.
Well, yeah.
Only they moved on from, you know, they're not getting high anymore. They're snorting meth.
Well, you know, I mean, you can't say you weren't bored. George Bush said he'd be a CEA president. Now, what have most of the CEAs been famous for recently?
Yeah, stealing. I mean, and who was his best CEO buddy?
The guy that ran Halliburton into the ground.
Enron, you know, I mean, his best buddy was Ken Lay, for God's sakes.
Sorry, yeah, I forgot that.
I mean, George Bush on the campaign trail in 2000 actually said, I want to run the federal government like my good friend Ken Lay runs Enron.
Yeah.
He said it.
He did. He has.
Yeah.
He has, absolutely. And it's scary as well, because, I mean, you know, even the BBC aren't really reporting on how absolutely insane and twisted your president is. I mean, they're kind of going, you know, oh, he's not very popular at home, when what they mean is his opinion rate, poll ratings are down to the low 20s or something. You know, I mean, they're saying, oh, he's possibly the least popular president ever. Well, he's certainly the least popular president for the last 100 years.
Yeah.
And that includes Nixon.
Let me ask you a question, Andy, please. Given the John Kerry flap and this business of thou shalt not criticize the military no matter what the military does, over there in the UK, when you catch your military screwing up, do people come out and say so, or are they shouted down by a bunch of right-wing proto-fascists and accused of criticizing the military when they're actually criticizing the way the military is run?
Well, the only people that kick up a fuss about criticisms of military behavior or action, the government. They're the only people who say you can't criticize the troops, and obviously what they mean is you can't criticize what we told them to do. Apart from that, no, we don't have sections of the population coming out going, you know, death to those who disagree with anybody.
Yeah, he has to apologize.
Yeah. I mean, we don't get any of that, and the simple reason for that is that our military is not seen as a right-wing or a left-wing thing. I mean, you've got to remember, we have a long tradition of actually going to places and helping them, not blowing them up, so our military is not necessarily seen as a bunch of bloodthirsty warriors who blow stuff up for a living.
Now, you've done your fair share of blowing stuff up.
We have. Don't get me wrong. We blow stuff up all the time, but we don't blow it up every second, like the Americans seem to. I mean, you know, we do. I mean, Europe and Britain work together to rebuild, like, various places. I mean, the Balkans, we can disagree or agree about whether it's a good idea. But, you know, Europe and Britain have a kind of tradition of not necessarily going in with guns blazing, whereas America pretty much only ever wants to go in with guns blazing. If you can't go in with guns blazing, you don't want to go in at all. It's kind of how your military works.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Haiti. You know, we went in, you know, can't we at least kidnap the prime minister? Right. But, I mean, you know, I asked that because of this whole flap about Kerry.
We wouldn't have that happen here. What we'd have is the government just doing what your government is doing. We'd have that part of it, you know, Tony Blair or whoever's defense minister saying, oh, you can't criticize the troops, it's unpatriotic, and everybody else in the House of Commons just go, yeah, right, shut up, you fool, and start jeering at them. Because that House of Commons is a lot more fun than your Senate.
Oh, by far and away.
Not as much fun as the Japanese one, though. Have you ever seen them?
The Korean one.
Japanese and Korea, they've both had to be cleared by riot police before now.
Yeah, and people pulled physically off of other people.
Yeah, at least they're passionate, man, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's the thing. I don't know how I could, you know, not that it'll ever happen, but I don't know how I could possibly function in that environment, you know, when I have to look at a guy like, you know, could you look at a guy like Mitch McConnell and refer to him as the esteemed senator from Kentucky?
Well, you know what we have to call them over here? The Right Honorable Gentleman.
Yeah,
lady. No, I know. I mean, I don't think I could stand across from Tony Blair, because, I mean, we have a rule in the House of Commons. You're not allowed to call someone a liar, even if they just lied to you directly to your face and you can prove it. You're not allowed to use the term liar. I think I'd probably be thrown out on about my third word.
You'd get to three, Andy?
He is, oh, maybe four, a liar. Or you bleeping liar. Three or four.
See, word what? Liar! And I'm gone.
Yeah, the speaker would have me thrown out. So, I mean, you know.
Sergeant at Arms will remove the Right Honorable Gentleman from his bench and throw him out on his arse.
Yeah, face down on the concrete. You know, I mean, we have a system. With both of us, I mean, your system's slightly less entertaining than ours. At least ours, you get some jeering and shouting, occasional paper aeroplanes being thrown. But, I mean, your system looks so boring. How do they expect everyone not to be apathetic about it? You know, of course we're apathetic. We're a bunch of thieves and we know it.
I know. Wouldn't you give anything just to inject a little life into that body? Be like a fifth.
With a vial of something and some water supply.
Or, you know, no, just slip it. Just go in with a straw and a bunch of paper napkins and quietly spitball the speaker once in a while. Yeah. Oh.
You could do that. I was thinking more hallucinogenics than water, because that would be really fun. But,
Mr. Speaker, the walls are melting.
Let's see you declare a war when you can't even focus on a map. That's my argument. But, you know, I mean, you guys have got a job to do on Tuesday, and even if you do your job right, I'm not convinced it's going to work out. And it depresses me, because if it doesn't, that's it. It's all over. Fascism, unless you guys hold a revolution.
Yeah, well, I try to be careful, Andy, of engaging in hyperbole, but I'm comfortable at this point that I am not doing so when I say that what happens Tuesday is the most important election that I have ever seen happen in my lifetime. And that, in fact, 2008, if we do not take the House and the Senate, or at least the House, I mean, I'm trying to, there's got to be some level of accountability. If we don't take some level of power back on Tuesday, 2008 is it's a dead act.
Well, November 2006 is going to be the day the Republic either comes back to life or dies. That's it. End of argument. You know, I mean, this is it. From Tuesday onwards, if they steal it from you, you don't have a republic. And even if you come back and start a new republic, that's a new republic. The United States of America may die or live on Tuesday, and that's it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like
United for so long.
The French number their republics, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are they on, the fifth or the sixth right now?
I think they're on the sixth. Yeah, and the fifth was killed by the Germans.
Yeah, because, you know, you've got to, and there's a little bit of honesty in that. And maybe that's where we are, Andy.
Mm. Well, that's it. I mean, you are, absolutely. I mean, first of all, there's a lot of arguments to say the Republic's been dead for a while, possibly since the 1890s. But you've had some elements of republic there available for you, and you've had your element of democracy. It's just they've finally now got around to where they wanted to be about 100 years ago, and they've finally got it back to the point of monarchy. I mean, remember that there were arguments in Philadelphia as to whether or not you should have a monarch or not. You know.
Well, yeah, and whether George Washington should be referred to as Your Highness.
Mm. Mm. And your George has obviously been told those bits of history, hasn't he? And he likes them.
Well, you know, this is the guy who was caught on videotape saying this would all be so much easier if it was a dictatorship as long as I was the dictator.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Karl Rove's probably been reading him those little bedtime stories as well, send him to sleep all happy in his coke-fueled dreams.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, I...
So I'm
keep your fingers crossed. I mean, we're gonna be here all day Monday and all day Tuesday, and we'll do our part.
Well, do so, man, and make sure you vote. I'm sure you will.
No, I will.
I'm going to be hopelessly optimistic.
Yeah, well, now I have to make sure that I go out. Agnes will go vote, too. I have to make sure that I go and vote for my senator, because that little old blue-haired lady's out there trying to unsee him because she says he's openly gay. Dear God. Andy, we got to roll. News time.
Yeah, well, take care, man, and good luck, everyone.
All right, thank you, and have a great weekend. Hey to Hazel.
Will do, man. Thank you.
Later.
Bye.
And to the news. This is the Head On Radio Network. A couple of lines open if you want to get involved. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Email to bob@headonradio.com. We'll be back.
This is the Quality News Network. CBS News reports the recent breach of security at the Los Alamos National Lab was far worse than originally thought. Officials now say the materials stolen may include information on how to deactivate locks on nuclear weapons. Police discovered the security breach last month when they conducted a drug raid in a New Mexico home. Another bloody day in Iraq. 8 U.S. military deaths today, 11 so far this month. In the past 2 days, the tortured bodies of another 83 Iraqis have been found dumped throughout Baghdad. The U.N. says as many as 100,000 Iraqis flee to neighboring countries every month, 3.4 million since the U.S. invasion. The U.N. report released today warns there is not enough money available to provide the refugees assistance. In Baghdad, the verdict in the first Saddam Hussein war crimes trial is expected Sunday. In preparation for possible violence, all Iraqi soldiers' leaves have been canceled. In the Gaza Strip, Israeli troops killed 19 Palestinians today. Two women were killed and 10 wounded when they attempted to act as human shields between Palestinian gunmen and Israeli soldiers. In Texas, live images from 8 cameras stationed along the Texas-Mexico border are now being broadcast on the web by the state's Department of Homeland Security. Officials are asking viewers to call in if they think they see immigrants sneaking over the border. The latest survey by American University shows the number of independent voters has risen to 17%. That's 3% higher than 4 years ago. The Campaign Media Analysis Group estimates 600 new television ads will air this final weekend before midterm elections. More than $2 billion have been spent on political advertising this year, even more than the 2004 presidential campaign. In Tennessee, a dozen so-called smart cards used to activate electronic voting machines are missing. Officials say the cards can be used with off-the-shelf computer equipment several times to cast multiple votes. In Washington, Ohio, Congressman Bob Ney resigned today. The powerful Republican pleaded guilty last month in the Jack Abramoff scandal. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Politics may indeed be in the blood. Researchers at the University of Nebraska studying the political views of 8,000 sets of twins found there may be a genetic component to political beliefs. The research team travels to Australia next month to continue studies there. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrices.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The UN Weather Agency reports greenhouse gases in the atmosphere reached a record high last year and are still increasing. In the Netherlands, more than 100 horses, marooned Tuesday when floodwaters breached a dike, were finally rescued today. 20 had already drowned. Three women rode horses out into the 7-foot waters and guided the herd to shore. U.S. sugar farmers and processors are asking the government to investigate the artificial sweetener Splenda, which they accuse of false advertising by claiming in its ads that it's made from sugar and so tastes like sugar. Splenda is actually made from a chemically altered version of sugar. Shares of boutique grocery chain Whole Foods plunged today, the biggest percentage drop ever. Company executives say they're feeling the pinch from other grocery chains who have also started offering organic produce and prepackaged gourmet foods. In Beijing, more than 40 African heads of states are meeting with Chinese officials to discuss trade. China is aggressively seeking African oil and minerals, last year spending $42 billion on the continent. Light sweet crude ended the trading day today at $59.14 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 32 points at 11,983. The Nasdaq down 3 at 2330. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, 2 days gone didn't seem to do a lot of damage. Knock wood. Wood. Oh, there's wood. I still can't believe where the time goes. Let's go back to the phones. Our good friend Luke is calling in from Knoxville. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Unfortunately, as you get older, that time just seems to disappear quicker and quicker.
Yeah, it does. But I'm just, you know, I'm just as grateful as I can be to be on the air.
This too is true. You know how it is. It's like I said, I thought you were going to have to get out the crystal set.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I didn't know. I missed a minute or two of your talk to Andy. Did you ask him about the poll they just did, this thing over there?
No, I didn't.
Where the, I think I sent you an email. I know you're backlogged on email. Where they had this poll over there, and they said that more people think Bush is more of a danger than Kim Il-sung.
What is it? Bush is the greatest danger to the security of the world, period?
Uh-huh.
I mean, that would be more dangerous than Ahmadinejad, Chavez, all the other bugaboos that they try to get. No, Bush, and you know what? The British people are correct in their estimation.
Well, the thing of it is, like we said, you know, you don't know which way he's going to turn. Is he going to get up on the left side or the right side of the bed and decide who he's going to attack next? You know?
Well, excuse me,
who should I attack now?
Yeah, well, this, you know, and 2 days go by and you feel like you've just, you've fallen into a barrel head first. This business of George coming out and saying, well, if the Democrats win, then the terrorists win, and that's the end of it. My God, I mean, is there no depth? Is there no end? I mean, is there no bottom to the shameless terrorizing? I mean, who's a terrorist now?
I was going to say, look, he, every time he goes back, he's over there, and it's either Karl Rove or Dick Cheney whispering things into his ear. He's got places still to go until he reaches their level. You know what I mean? It's one of these things where, you know, it's like you say, it's one of those things where you just wonder what's the next stupid thing out of his mouth, and it's like, God, you know, you're sitting there going, I didn't think he could get any worse. It's like, yeah, he can.
Well, I know, and I find myself thinking that frequently, and every time I do, you know, boom.
It surprises us.
Well, it's not really a surprise. It's just,
I know.
I've got to teach myself to quit thinking that way. Because there is no end to his perfidy,
the one I liked was the Democrats have no plan. I went, oh yes, and that crackerjack plan you've got's really done well too, hasn't it?
Yeah. That assumes that you've got one, George. How about sharing it with us?
Pat Roberts that said the thing? Yeah, Conrad Burns.
Yeah, it was Conrad Burns.
He's got a plan, but he can't tell it to you. It's like, what? Does somebody not have the decoder ring? What? You know. somebody not have the right password?
And the beauty of that is, you know, that's a rehash of Nixon.
Here I have the secret plan.
I have a secret plan to get us out of Vietnam.
Right up till the day after he's elected, and the plan? What plan?
Well, it turns out his plan was to bomb the snot out of Cambodia to end the Vietnam War.
No, I'm talking about George.
George's
plan? I don't need any plans. I've been reelected. You know, I've got a Congress. You know, my Congress is back for the next 2 years.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite lines. And now I'm going to spend some political capital. Well, I guess he's all spent out, isn't he?
I was going to say, yeah, but going in there and hearing the flushing sound ain't the same thing. Okay, let's get into some good stuff here. Let's see, what was it? Oh, well, you were talking about what's going to go on over there. You saw the thing today about the Israelis shooting at the women.
Oh, yeah.
I figure, you know, we were talking about, you know, how's he going to start the war with Iran? He's not. I figure the Israelis are. Then we're going to, of course, have to go in to help our good friends.
Oh,
I think that's where I don't think we're going to do it directly. I think somebody else is going to do it, and then we're going to get drug in.
Well, and this little chess match in the Persian Gulf is a lot of fun. What is it, four battle groups now? And, of course, this program, very few others we're talking about. There's four U.S. Navy battle groups playing war games in the very narrow, very spooky waters of the Persian Gulf. Iran decided that they were going to play with their bottle rockets. And they used some of their shore-to-sea missile test-fired a few of those in the last couple of days.
I know. It's like, well, you all shouldn't be doing that. It's like, well, you're sitting there in our backyard firing off as much ordnance as you can, and we're not supposed to notice?
Right.
You know? But you see the thing also, the thing they had where they talked about the fact that right now and I know this has been going on a while, but it, for some reason it flagged up again. That apparently, if you're a conservative, your websites are not blocked in Iraq. But if you're a liberal, well, I'm sorry, you can't go to those sites.
Yeah, blocked. Personal page.
Yeah. And also on there, something about, and this has essentially, and we've taken down your name for looking at this, too. You know, so. Then we turned around and had this story. You see the story this past week where they were talking about the Army recruiters. They're going in there and telling every story in the book, and I'm just sitting there going, you know, you never see any of these Army recruiters on these religious campuses. I wonder why. You know, they want to visit campuses, fine. Why aren't we visising Liberty?
Well, yeah, and one of the greatest, it was a lovely piece of work, this character who's running against Henry Waxman in California, 25-year-old Republican. And Colbert looks at him and says, so why aren't you in Iraq? You support the war. You're a Republican. You talk about how you support the war. Why aren't you there? Well, there's other ways to support it. I'm running for Congress.
Well, you know, it's like that evening that Randy was on Larry King Live and had the young Republican was on there. Aren't
yeah, the guy with the Beatles, the Beatles yeah. mop-top haircut.
Said, you know, well, why aren't you there? I saw one of the stories.
You remember his answer, Luke?
Oh.
Just because I root for the Yankees doesn't mean I have to wear the uniform.
Well, there was an article, something about a week ago, and it was, or oh, was it Hightower or Keller that said, you know, where are Barbara and Jenna? Where's George P. Bush? You know, where are these 20-somethings in the Bush family? Since dear leader keeps telling us it's a noble cause, where are the kids? Why aren't they over there? You know, it's like, gee, George, you like to think it's a noble cause when you want to send other people's kids off. Why haven't you sent yours?
Well, you know, because people get shot over there, and it's very scary. And, you know, look, Jenna and Barbara were raised by their daddy, and their daddy's a coward, so they probably are, too.
Well, you know, it's like the thing was, we didn't tell them about my drinking and all these problems because we didn't want them to have trouble. It's like, well, George, apparently that plan didn't work. Because these were the two that were having the Secret Service go out and block people from carting them, apparently, when they were getting liquor when they were in their teens.
Well, you know, maybe we could make a deal with the Bush family, Luke. Maybe we could make a deal with them where we say, listen, Jenna and Babs will join the National Guard. We promise we'll never send them to Iraq, but they actually have to show up and do the, you know, and do the stint.
No. That would make sense. No, even that wouldn't make sense, but you know what I mean. They wouldn't even go that far.
I mean,
they might like to get probably have their pictures taken in uniforms, but never show up.
They could go around and like do recruiting stuff and personal appearances and PR and things like that.
You know, it's some of this stuff. You know, with this, you're just kind of sometimes you're just sitting there going, huh? The down here, like I say, it's gotten to, you know, like I say, down here in the slime fest, it's gotten to the point. You know, I'm almost to the point now. I'm afraid to look at the TV anymore.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of it. It's all over after November 7th. But
oh, I know them. They probably still got some of them paid for. You know how it is around here. They probably pay for commercials for another week.
Well, where does that election stand now, Luke?
It depends who you listen to. It's either even or it's up. Either one of them is up 2 to 3 points. You know how that goes. It just depends who you're listening to at the time.
Yeah. Well, the thing that scares me in that race, Luke, is the fact that everybody else could be disgusted with their ugly little racist ads, but you know, in a 1 to 2 or 3 point race, if you figure that in Tennessee or any other southern state, 1 or 2 or 3% are still hardcore race baited, you know.
Ford had one good line recently, and I really enjoyed it. You know, they had all the problem. You know, with Corker couldn't. You know, said I have no control over the commercials. You know,
yeah.
And one of the places Ford said, you know, isn't it amazing? He can't get a commercial taken down for 3 to 4 days. Wonder how he's going to get stuff done in the Senate.
Well, that was my point when I said, you know, they'll bring him into the Senate, and I'm new here. I don't know who to talk to. I don't know where the restroom is, so I'll just pee in the floor.
Gore, stand beside Lamar, you know, the shadow standing over in the corner.
Yeah, just find the guy with the flannel shirt and stick by him.
So he doesn't say much. We think he's a mute, but we're not real sure. You know,
I watch a lot of C-SPAN. I never see Lamar Alexander say anything.
Hey, don't know me. I live in the state. I don't see him.
Jeez.
It's one of those things. We at least had to see Frist because he was the leader of the Senate, but that's about the only reason we probably did.
Well, you know, I've heard Harold Ford talk a lot in this campaign. And look, I mean, I'm going to be straight up. I want him elected because he's a Democrat. But I was born at night, not last night, and Ms. Kincaid didn't raise no dummy. He is not my kind of Democrat.
No, but that's okay. You know what I mean? I don't mind having a spectrum of people. I mean, I don't expect everybody up there to be a liberal. And that's fine. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like the way they're talking now, like, say, we're going to have a nice spread, whichever way it goes. The one I'm thinking that we're going to get surprised on, not here, I think the place where you might see the surprise, I think, is Arizona is turning out to maybe be the surprise.
Oh,
Kyle?
Yeah. Is he in that bad? Is he in trouble?
The way they're talking out there, as much as Kyle's in trouble, the one who I'm really hoping that they get rid of is J.D. Hayworth.
Oh, he's evil.
So,
but I want Conrad Burns out of there, okay. Real, real bad.
But you know what I mean. But I think the way I've been reading some of the stuff from the Republic out there, and you know it depends. You know which way you want to listen, which way the numbers are. But I think that Arizona may end up being a surprise state. You know what I mean? Something because, like I say, one thing more than anything else, everybody questioned Dean's 50-state strategy. Well, dang, if Dean didn't have the right strategy at the right time.
Yeah, exactly.
Just imagine if we'd have stayed with the old strategy. Now we wouldn't be competitive in half these races.
Well, let me take it back to Tennessee for a minute, Luke. What kind of a response is the Julia Corker photos getting?
I haven't heard that much on it. I saw them over at Bart Cop, and I was like, oh, this ought to be fun. But we'll see what it goes.
I mean, they've been floating around out there for a solid week now.
I know. Well, you know how it is. I'm sure the mainstream people around here won't even talk. Haven't been talking about them. So you know what I mean. It's one of those things. I was sitting on hold the other day for our local right wing radio show, and left me out of dial tone zone for an hour and a half.
Nice of them.
Oh yeah. It's one of those things. I was getting ready to go to work that morning. I got on it before 7. 8:30. He came back on. Said, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry." I said, "Good, I'm heading out the door. Have a nice day." But I'm already late to work. Thank you kindly. So,
well, I mean,
make sure somebody answered the phone.
Well, Well, I'm just I would be interested to see if it's getting any kind of play, because
not that I know of.
I mean, this guy can't even raise up a daughter so that she won't have pictures taken of herself, you know, necking with one of her girlfriends.
I'm just sitting there going to this thing. It's like, where?
But wait, at St. Mary's School.
Well, I was just there going, when I saw those, I said, you know, I really should watch that next time I see the infomercial for Girls Gone Wild. She might be in it.
Well, that's what you've seen. This is what these pictures look like.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it looks like. If I were to look at that, I'm sure it's the exact same thing. You know what I mean? So.
But like you
were saying a minute ago, though, look at Barbara and Jenna. I mean, it's like saying,
bless his heart. Bart Cop says, you know, we need Corker in the Senate because we need this little loose cannon around for a few years.
It's one of those things. It's, you know, it's like, look at Barbara and Jenna. They got caught drinking and everything else underage. Of course, the Secret Service was there to say, no, you can't do anything to them.
No.
Couldn't. So what if they're underage? Of course, if that had been Chelsea Clinton, we'd, of course, all had to testify and bring photos.
Well, isn't that, yeah, and, you know, Rush Limbaugh could call her the White House dog.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, but let me let you go on. I know you have a...
Luke, have a great weekend.
Bye, bud.
All right, later.
Bye.
Bye now. Speaking of, if this had happened in the Clinton administration, This is a real live one. The report I'm looking at comes from the Chicago Tribune. And see, this is the kind of stuff that really makes you wonder about the depth of the involvement of the Bush administration in so many creepy things. Headline, U.S. website said to reveal nuke info. Have you seen this? You know, this is one of those where you shake your head and you hear your brains rattling. You go, what the hell is this? Last March, the federal government set up a website to make public a vast archive of Iraqi documents captured during the war. And this is by William J. Broad of the New York Times News Service, and I can't recall reading a bunch of his stuff, but this is bad journalism. Because it uses vague language. Language that we deserve better than. Whew, tortured grammar in my own right. But I've gone through this article, and the gist of the story is that congressional Republicans, and that's my criticism of the journalism, that's the line here, it says, the Bush administration did so under pressure from congressional Republicans who said they hoped to leverage the Internet. In other words, they wanted some 13-and-a-half-year-old kid who actually knew how to set the clock on the VCR to go through the Iraqi documents and find them some weapons of mass destruction. Really. Now, the Bush administration did so under pressure from congressional Republicans who said they hoped to leverage the Internet to find new evidence of the pre-war dangers posed by Saddam Hussein. It's that phrase, pressure from congressional Republicans. Would it be too much to ask a journalist to, as the saying goes, name names? Could we find out who those congressional Republicans were who were so anxious to put this information up on the web? Now, the government has shut down the website following a New York Times inquiry about complaints from weapons experts and arms control officials, because last week the International Atomic Energy Agency complained to the U.S. ambassador to that agency, saying that the technical experts for the IAEA were shocked at the public disclosures of stuff that it's a handbook, and it's not just in Arabic, it's in English. And Arabic, I suppose. I haven't been to the website. But it's all about Iraq's... This is the stuff that George Bush said, I am demanding that Saddam Hussein to prove to us that he has no weapons of mass destruction, and he must disclose that by December the 10th. Or face extremely grave consequences. You know, he tried to kill my daddy. And then, so Saddam turns over the reams and reams and reams and reams of documents. And the right-wingers came out and said,
oh, that's not very fair, because they was in Arabic, and we don't read none of that Arab language. Why can't he speak English?
Well, apparently some of them were translated. I mean, some were in English, some were in Arabic, and a bunch of them went up on the Internet. And as it turns out, these are detailed accounts of Iraq's secret nuclear research that go back before Bush War I. In fact, what it turns out they are is a basic guide for building an atomic bomb! Jiminy! Oh, gosh almighty, who might like to have something like that? The Republican Party and members thereof, who this article is not kind enough to tell us. We just kind of have to guess. Republicans, wait for it, are enabling the terrorists. That's a, there's a reason for a change in power in the Congress. How about having competent people who don't put up bona fide how to build a bomb instructions on the daggum Internet? I mean, what was this? What was this? John Negroponte's the Facebook page? Hobbies? Spreading nuclear proliferation instructions. Ah! There's a dozen documents. They got charts. They got diagrams. There's equations. And whole descriptions about how to build a nuclear bomb. And what's more, the IAEA experts, International Atomic Energy Agency, they say that the information that's contained in there is well beyond any of the other stuff they could find by Googling atomic bomb on the Internet. Among other things, there is detailed description of various componentry in nuclear weapons. I mean, you know, there's the old joke about the mechanical engineer, the economist, and the philosopher who are stranded on a desert island. They've got all kinds of canned food, but they don't have a can opener. And the mechanical engineer, and they're trying to figure out how they can eat so they don't starve. And the mechanical engineer, you know, comes back 2 weeks later and he's developed this detailed Rube Goldberg device that involves a palm tree and dropping a rock on the can at such an angle that it'll puncture and open and blah, 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 blah. The philosopher has come back with a detailed exegesis of the benefits of eating food in order to stay alive. And they asked the economist for his plan, and he says, well, first imagine a can opener. Now, this isn't that. This isn't, well, you know, first you're going to need a nuclear firing switch. You know, take 2 cups of plutonium. This isn't that. These are detailed plans for building nuclear firing circuits and triggering the explosives. And, you know, some incidental information on the radioactive cores of atomic bombs. Now, the hardcore tinfoil helmet crowd will say that this is living proof that George Bush put on a black coat and put little black bombs inside the World Trade Center on September 10th. But I submit to you that this is proof that they are utterly, wholly, and totally incompetent. In many ways, incompetence is far more deadly than active evil. Because incompetence leads to unintended consequences. The actively evil are I think I've got that wrong. I'm not talking about actively evil. But incompetence versus competence or competently evil, these are incompetently evil people. These are people who were so incompetent that they quietly watched 9/11 grow and blossom and happen. These people are so incompetent now that they have to send Dear Leader out to say, well, you know, I inherited the war against Iraq. But, you know, while we talked about that a little bit earlier, it's also worth noting what that really is about. This is the one time that I don't think that George Bush is going to blame Bill Clinton. This has to do with that god-awful, weird Oedipal thing that's going on between George W. and George H.W. I inherited a war against Saddam from my daddy. See, I had to go in and invade and take Saddam from power because my daddy was too much of a weak-kneed wussy. That's why I had to challenge him to a fight one night when I was drunker than Adam's off ox. This is that dynamic. But yeah, sure. Congressional Republicans. Who the hell were they? You know, was it that crazy Weldon, Kurt Weldon in Pennsylvania? He's good at this kind of stuff.
Oh, he found the weapons of mass destruction, but the liberal media won't report it.
Was it crazy Rick Santorum? Was it crazy John Cornyn or crazy K. Bailey Hutchinson? Was it that crazy Hoekstra, Hextra, Heekstra guy? Was it crazy Boner? Was it crazy Hastert? Who was it? Is it too much to ask that we be told? And see, what's more, way back last spring when they put this stuff up on the internet, the United Nations arms control people came to him and said, you know, please, look what you, do you realize, what, take it down. But of course, the Department of Homeland Security and John Negroponte and Director of National Security and Michael Skelador Chertoff, and they were all so convinced that some 13-year-old out there would go through these documents and find out where the weapons of mass destruction really were. You know, hell, for all we knew, same 13-year-old could probably also have found the real killer of Nicole Simpson. That they left it up there. Because, well, you know, the terrorists, they're not that smart. They never use the internet or nothing. The fools. Let's go to the phones. Cody's calling from San Francisco. Hey, Cody, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
All is well. I was just I was watching Jesus Camp yesterday, and it's a movie, I'm sure you know about it, just anyways.
Yeah, the one where the little kids pray to the cutout of George Bush?
Yes, it is. It was my my Halloween deal, and I had to terrify myself, so I decided to watch that horror movie. And there's a scary demon in there, and I was looking up, trying to find his name. I'm running through the internet trying to find it, can't find it. But he's been on the news tonight, and he's the guy from Jesus Camp, the megachurch guy who was representing 30 million conservative Christians, and he bought meth, and he got admitted to buying meth and getting massages from a homosexual man.
But he only got massaged. He didn't have any gay sex or anything.
Right. Sure, he did it. Just like he didn't inhale the meth either.
Right. I was just buying it to take it off the market.
That's right. No, I mean, it's just so sick to have to see him manipulating those children and to represent, and he was joking. He was saying it's a wonderful life. If the evangelicals vote, they control the election. That was his catchphrase. And then the next day to see him get busted, it was just, I feel so good inside now. I mean, to see him fall off. It's just I love to see him fall off when they're big like that. And And, you know, it was interesting because the powersandmorrison.com, I just took on the San Francisco Chronicle because they're just not doing their homework. And they wrote this slanderous article about Josh Wolf, how he's not a journalist and whatnot. And then November 9th, the Society of Professional Journalists are going to be handing out an award, and that award is for Journalist of the Year. And if you can guess who the recipient is, it's Josh Wolf.
Is it going to be Josh?
It's going to be Josh.
That's great.
He's not a journalist, according to the Chronicle, but he's getting Journalist of the Year. I mean, from the Society of Professional Journalists, which is a big union.
Yeah.
You know, and they've donated $30,000 to his legal fund. And it's just so interesting, and I realize why the Chronicle is hitting on him, why the LA Times is hitting on him. I had a hard time understanding it, and I finally understand why it is. And it's because they fear the citizens' media. We're going to take – it's about market share. We take their market share. Do right-wingers buy the Times or the Chronicle? No, liberals do. More and more liberals are getting their news from independent media sites.
Sure.
And when they do that, they aren't going to go out and buy the Chronicle. They don't have to. And that is what they're afraid of. They're afraid that citizens' media is going to bankrupt them. And this has been going on since the Internet really started to catch on. I mean, this is an old topic from back in the AOL days, and people are like, well, then people are just going to get their, you know, read the newspaper online. They're not going to have to buy a newspaper. But this is their proposition, the mainstream media. What they want to do is they want to narrowly define who qualifies as a protected journalist so that they can have an elite class of professionals work for the mainstream media outlets, while reporters for the alternative press would be given no choice but to practice their craft without a net. And this would establish a state-sanctioned journalist license. And anyone would be subject to having their license revoked. And they equate this. And the person who wrote this article had a PhD, and they were equating this to, like, doctors or lawyers. But this is sick because this is state-sponsored media.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, that's been...
No, I mean, I've followed everything you've said, Cody, and it makes sense.
It's scary. It reminds me of... Either it reminds me of fascism or extreme communism in China. It reminds me of when they're showing some stuff on Kim Jong-il and they have the propaganda speakers. All the peasants have to hear the propaganda all day.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, if you don't report the correct news, you get your license taken away for straying from the party line. It's not that journalism isn't the same thing as being a doctor or a lawyer. I mean, you look at Thomas Paine and being broke and putting out his pamphlets, and everyone in the 18th century, they were big in time into pamphlets and printing presses. And
oh, yeah.
Out. I mean, this is an American value, independent journalism, citizens' media.
Absolutely, and just to carry it forward, because I know you are interested in this topic, Cody, look up and read and find out what you can about a woman by the name of Anne Royal. Anne Royal. She operated in the 19th century. And back when the fundamentalist religious goons were trying to get hold of our government, she fought them back then. And they went to the point where they were doing things like shoving her downstairs.
Good grief.
She was a real printed her own broadsheet, that kind of thing. And was personally responsible for the congressional funding of the first test telegraph.
Interesting.
She was sort of like the world's first blogger. Very, very interesting personality. I think you'll be fascinated with what you find out. Jeff Biggers, in his book The United States of Appalachia, devotes several pages to her, and I think there's a wiki entry on her, things like that. There is a tradition, and the reason I bring her up is it doesn't die out with the American Revolution. It grows with the American experiment in representative government. And what we're seeing here is a concerted attempt to make it die.
Absolutely, and it's sort of interesting because I was researching this and I found a Supreme Court case where they addressed this blogger issue, and they say that the architecture of the Internet as it is right now is perhaps the most important mode of free speech since the founding of the Republic. 200 years after the framers ratified the Constitution, the net has taught us what the First Amendment means. The model for speech that the framers embraced was the model of the Internet, distributed, non-centralized, fully free and diverse.
through the use of chat rooms that any person on the phone line can become a town crier with a voice that resonates farther than it could from any soapbox. Through the use of the web pages, mail explorers, and news groups, the same individual can become a pamphleteer.
Exactly.
These PhD having professional journalists, they didn't look that up before they decided to say that this isn't journalism, this guy's a hack, and that I'm a hack, and that, but they're scared. We're taking their 50 cents away from them, and I'm sorry, and I don't want newspapers to go away. However, nothing works well without competition. Every radio programs, citizens media, stores, whatever it is, you have to have competition, because in the absence of competition, you get stopped and lazy.
As American media is.
That's right, and I hope that the blogosphere will put pressure on them to wake up and to understand that they have to compete for people's time. You know, people's time is valuable, and they spend, in an hour with the news, they could spend that hour with PowersandMorrison.com or ReportedNews.net, and, you know, people that really sacrifice like Sarge and go out there in the field instead of just plagiarizing, and the plagiarism.
Well, right. It's like this news story I was talking about from New York Times News Service, that these documents about Iraq's nuclear weapons programs from before Bush War I, were put up on the internet, and it just says it was done at the pressuring of some congressional Republicans. Now,
yeah,
as a journalist, and feel free to disagree, as a journalist, if that's the most you can get, then you need to indicate somewhere in your story that the most we were able to learn is that it was some congressional Republicans. We weren't able to learn who those Republicans were. But if you use that as some sort of a shorthand to keep from having to name the names of the people who were responsible for it, then that's lazy and dishonest, and that kind of journalism does not deserve to make money or survive in the marketplace of ideas.
Absolutely. It reminds me of when the Times sat on those NSA wiretapping stories. You know, if Sarge or myself would have got a hold of that kind of information, it would have hit the presses immediately.
Absolutely.
We would have sat on it for 9 months. That's despicable, reprehensible behavior on the side of journalism. And the reason why you ran into that problem is reminds me of why you hear a lot of talk shows say, well, the news doesn't make money for networks, and that's why they've dumbed it down. They just copy each other. The New York, all these other papers, now that they're all owned by only a couple big companies, they'll just reprint that story. That story that you read, I might read that story at AOL News, but it'll just be the same story that you read. Instead of when I write about Josh Wolf, instead of just going and looking through all the newspaper articles, I went and got myself some court transcripts and some court documents, and I said, wow, there's a whole other story here. Went out into the field and got the information.
Yeah, you did some journalism.
That's journalism, not just restating. And that's what I found when I was reading the Chronicle the other day. I was like, everything that this person with this degree who makes all this good living did was go read a bunch of other people's articles and then put it in their own words. That's the half-ass effort. That's what you were encountering when you can't find out what the names of these Republicans are now.
Yeah, it's incest. What it boils down to is a pseudo-journalistic incest.
That's perfect. That's exactly what it is. You need. I hope that some aggressive journalists will, from maybe some small paper or somebody with some character, will go out and find out those names. I want to know those names, and you want to know those names.
Yeah, well, I mean, and let me be clear about this story. I think it's pretty stupid that the federal government put that information up there.
It was a political move. It was not to keep America safe. It was they always champion their causes. They are hypocrites. These Republicans, they're always trying to say they're trying to keep us safe, how we Democrats are not going to keep us safe. But they put, do you know that one of the documents out there was how to make bombs?
Yeah. And granted, I mean, I think I've got a few years on you, Cody. So I can tell you that I remember a certain episode of Barney Miller, the great, great, great sitcom from back in the late 70s, where a guy gets brought into the precinct carrying a suitcase. And they say, what's in the suitcase? Atomic bomb. All it needs is the reactive matter. Where did you learn to build something like that? Went to the library. And, I mean, the information really is out there. But it was the level of detail that was in this that was stunning, and especially for a gang that tells us, you know, like you said, we're keeping you safe, and who says things like, you know, the terrorists are going to take your Bibles and your women and blow them up or chop their heads off or burn your Bible. We're not sure. Burn your, but, you know, so there's an understory to this, too. And I try to be alert to it, to this kind of thing. This is, you know, if you think back to Michael Chertoff delivering that address a couple of weeks ago where he said that people could now become terrorists without ever having to go to a terrorist training camp just by going on the internets. And they could become disaffected here in the United States and become terrorist sympathizers just by going on the internet. There is a steady move toward making the internet, because the internet is the only place that there's really any truth, really any freedom going on. There's a steady move toward making the internet the scariest place in the world. You know, your children are going to get solicited for sex, and somebody's going to learn how to build a bomb and blow your children up. And your children are going to turn into disaffected terrorist sympathizers if you let them onto the internet. All of this, and this, you know, oh, we can learn how to build bombs on the internet? Well, we need to shut the internet down.
Okay, I mean, I understand. And what I have to do is point the finger back and say, you guys in the administration, as a political move, release this information to the right-wing bloggers without going through it first to make sure that what you're releasing was safe. And that's a fact. Now, where I would draw a conclusion would be, Bob, do you think that they did this intentionally so that they can try to attack the internet, that they set the internet up by releasing this information?
I can't help but think that there is an element of that in all of this. Because, you know, the How to Build a Bomb stuff is largely, I mean, you know, it's in public libraries. That's why.
The anarchist cookbook stuff has been on the web for.
Well, sure, but I mean, this. But also think back to the response of the American Library Association, Cody, when the Department of Homeland Security came in, it goes into libraries and said, we need to see who's been checking out stuff about how to build bombs. I mean, the FBI does this now. They go around the country trying to see who's checked out the anarchist cookbook, for instance.
Well, they also want to see you read Noam Chomsky, too.
Yeah. All of it. I mean, this is, you know, these, and as a consequence of that, you know, it's all about, the Bush administration cannot be happy with the internet. You know, I'm not, I have no doubt that Agent Fred has tuned into this program from time to time. We know that the websites have been hit by the NSA. But, you know, are they sitting around actively worrying about Bob Kincaid? No, but they're worrying about Bob Kincaid. They're worrying about Cody. They're worrying about Powers and Morrison. They're worried about UnreportedNews.net. They're worried about the Air America. They're worried about Nova M. They're worried about anything that attacks their paradigm of terrorizing the American people.
And then they wage economic warfare against Nova M when Mike was reading off all of those sponsors, those 100 sponsors that were boycotting the progressive radio network.
Right, you know, and that rises to a level of a violation of the Sherman Act, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, what you're reminding me of is a section. I'm looking at Greg Pallas' Armed Madhouse, and he's got this picture in here from a warning label that was in libraries. I mean, we live in a day and age where you come into a library and there's a real poster up that says under Section 215 of the Patriot Act, records of books and other materials you borrow from this library may be obtained by federal agents. And this law prohibits librarians from informing you if the federal agents have obtained records about you. I mean, it just sounds like a Fourth Amendment violation.
Well, sure it is. You're allowed to be secure in your person, papers, and effects. But, you know, getting some right-wing activist judge to agree to that, not so much.
Yeah, and just another thing. I turn on Fox sometimes for entertainment, and they always go off about the liberal judges. But they're outnumbered. They're so outnumbered by the conservatives on the federal bench.
Yeah.
It's such a joke that they go after the judiciary. They should go after the judiciary, but for other reasons.
Well, but see, they can go after the appointed judiciary. They can go after because they can scream all day long, but they never have to deliver, Cody, because the appointed judiciary never has to run for office.
Absolutely. Now, do you know that about that little fringe story? It was on Salon. It was the exclusive Salon story. It had to do with Bush auctioning off the judgeships.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, the judges who were under consideration having to funnel money to either Republican campaigns, the Republican National Committee, or to George Bush himself in order to get their appointment. Jesus criminy.
But it was cheap. It was only $2,000.
Yeah.
Let's put our money together. Let's buy ourselves some judges.
Judge Cody. Buddy. Yeah.
Hey, I'm, I might be able to scrape together the funds. And we could really do some changes.
Hey, Cody, we got to roll on, but good
Thanks
to hear
so
from you, brother.
All right, have a
good weekend. Bye now. And a new caller, John from Vermont. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, you?
Pretty good. I'm calling from Vermont.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I've been listening to your show for a few months now, and I have a good time whenever I can. I enjoy listening to you almost preach.
So am I.
Yeah, but I'm a little nervous here. But
We've never lost a caller yet. Take a breath and be at ease.
I have a couple things I'd like to talk about if I can.
Go ahead.
One of them is I'm kind of a little different than probably a lot of your callers in that I have my own business. I've been in business since I'm 60 years of age, but I've been in business since I was 18 years of age. And I've been on both sides of, I guess, the spectrum. I've made some money. I've lost it. I've managed to see both sides of the world a little bit. And I don't trust the people in this country anymore who are wealthy or have money. I have a tremendous distrust for it. It's gotten to a point where I even have trouble doing business with some of the people I deal with. There's so much arrogance about how they treat their employees, how they treat people.
Have you seen this story about it? Now, you're lucky you're in Vermont. You're not up to your eyeballs in Walmart yet.
No, we've been fighting to keep them out, and that's a battle that's been going on here for a while, and Walmart is a good example.
Did you see this latest revelation about the way they're going to start treating their employees? That, for instance, being late for work on account of snowstorms is no longer acceptable, and it will result in a demerit to your record?
And that's unbelievable. Walmart is a good example of where we're headed with people. And the thing is that with these wealthy companies and wealthy people, they keep talking about freedom. How can you be free if you're not free of pain and suffering?
Exactly.
How can you be free if you can't control how you make a living yourself? Or control your income. The Republicans in this country want to control everything except wages. They don't want to control that. They want that forced downward.
No, they want to maintain negative controls on wages.
That's right. And where are we going to go? I mean, how are people going to purchase goods and services that we provide each other if we're not able to... to give you an example, I'm in the graphic arts industry, the advertising business. And at one point, when I moved to Vermont, I joined what is known as the Printers Association. And what it turned out to be is a group of men that would get together and they would talk about their different problems. One of the things I was instructed never to do when I first joined, is that I could not hire an employee away from another company. What kind of control is that? They're trying to control wages. They're trying to control labor. That's not right.
No, it's not. And if you think back, John, to the transit workers' strike in New York, 6-9 months ago? Remember when that happened?
Yes.
Those people were threatened with prison, and some went. The head of the union went to prison over it, And, you know, the lesson from that is that we have gotten to a place in the United States where a working person can no longer withhold their labor. Now, the last I checked, that's a definition of slavery, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I don't know where we're headed, but I'll tell you, it's scary. And everything I read in the paper, I'm to the point where I don't trust any of it anymore. I don't trust anything I read. I don't believe it.
Well, where the business system is, where the way we do business in this country is concerned, John, it's because the idea of capitalism has been turned on its ear as an excuse for the cronyism or oligarchy or whatever word you want to use to describe it. Adam Smith, if he looked at the way business is done in the United States today, would run screaming from the room. It's not real capitalism because, you know, as a small business owner, you know that your employees share the risk of your success or failure as you do as much or more than they. Okay? Now, compare that with the head of a corporation who constantly loses money and keeps getting paid more to lose it. Now, the employees of that corporation, they're sharing in the risk because when he finally runs it into the ground, they're going to be out of a job and probably get their pensions ripped off.
That's true.
On the other hand, the head of that corporation is guaranteed, no matter how badly he fails, that he will leave that job a multi-gazillionaire. That's not sharing the risk, and that is therefore not capitalism.
It would be nice if we could really try capitalism. You know, with smaller businesses, smaller companies, we have a chance. But these big conglomerates, they're just gobbling everything up. Walmart's a good example. Walmart is going into the drug industry.
Yeah.
They're going to start selling drugs. So one of the big drug pharmaceutical companies up in this area, I don't know how much it's around the United States, but it's Kinney Drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They just bought out a big distribution company in Canada. So what are they going to be doing with that?
They're going to bring the drugs in from Canada at a cheaper rate through the Canadian government regulation system, and then run the retail markup to their customer so that they're making more money than any other drug outfit.
That's true.
I mean, that's my guess.
In the medical industry, I mean, one of the biggest con jobs we're going through in this country right now is we hear stories about how bad the Canadian medical system is. That is a pile of nonsense.
Sure it is.
You know, one of the things that doctors do up there is if you have a family doctor and you need an operation or they discover you have cancer or whatever it is, it's up to your doctor, and I know this for a fact. I live within 50 miles of the border. I'm up in Canada at least once a week. And I don't know of anybody that's ever been turned down or been put aside because they needed some...
Yeah, well, right, because they create this impression that if you go if you go rolling into an emergency room in Canada with a code blue heart attack, that they'll put you on a waiting list and you know, maybe you die. That's just a bunch of bunk. That's just lying.
That's true.
You know, your medical needs are met up there. And why is it we only talk about Canada? You know, there are hybrid healthcare systems in, what, France, Germany, all over Europe, some more state sponsored, some with a more heavy private industry aspect to it. But you know, this is supposed to be the United States where we can do anything we set our minds to. So it kind of tells me that we are not interested. At least the people who are controlling the government and the people who control the so-called healthcare industry, they're not interested in everybody being able to go to the doctor when they're sick.
Well, there's a doctor that has he's semi-retired. He's been shut down recently. It's Dr. Bouchard. He has an office right at the border. And many of the people in Rock Island, Derby Line, you know, the towns around there, half the people on one side were born on another side of the border. This doctor has a sign up in his office, and it says, "If you haven't got any money, just give me a handshake. That's all you have to pay." That's the God's truth. And they shut him down.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, this is, his office is in Canada. His son is also a doctor. and practices here in Vermont. And I know I used to go to them when I didn't have medical insurance. I do today. It cost me about $13,000 a year for my wife and myself.
Holy mackerel.
And I don't know how, you know, that's a good piece of my income.
No kidding. John, it's so good to hear from you. We've got to roll out, though. We're fresh out of time.
It's nice talking to you, and keep it up. I enjoy listening to you.
Well, thank you very kindly. I hope we'll hear from you again.
I will.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. Thanks, everybody. So glad to be back. Thanks to Agnes for producing. Thanks to Brian Reznor, announcing, John Fox, engineer extraordinaire. Big, big, really loud applause for Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida. That we wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for Peter. And, of course, all of this happens because there are several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters who get up every day and they go out and they build the American dream. And in building that American dream and supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.